And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here and declare your independence. I'm here in Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, if from the B-E-A-U-T full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Ooh, I almost got up early. Yeah, this is first day back in the studio from the Libertarian National Convention, which was all kinds of wonderful. If you heard Tuesday's show from Orlando, you know, we re-ran it yesterday. Donna and I went, you know, hot air ballooning. We may talk about in the second hour. And there's a lot of stuff still going on. There's, you know, the things are happening. Well, there's a lot of other stuff going on, too. We're going to be talking to Nick Dranius here in just a second. He has I wouldn't call it an initiative. It's not like a petition initiative. It's an initiative with the states to do a Compact for America, compactforamerica.org. And Nick and I have been talking about this for, God, over like a decade, you know, about how we're going to fix America. And I'm just like, you know, it's going to get fixed one way or another. But he has an idea to fix it. And we're going to talk to him about it. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ernie, it's great to be on.
Okay, you gave a presentation at the last discussion group. And there's a monthly thing that we go to that meets except in the summer months, and we just took a hiatus till September. And it's been around for, God, you know, 40 years or so, 20, long time. And it's a lot of the boys, I mean, you know, it's, you know, you get the Americans for Prosperity this and the Cato that and the Goldwater Institute, what's his name, and doctor, lawyer, judges, and everybody sits around, and some of us black sheep, but you're still voting people, you know, or kind of what up. But, you know, Nick has been pushing for quite a while an opportunity to try and, what is the main purpose? Is it financial, or is it other things go into that, or are we just focusing on the financials and the debt and such and deficit in America? Tell me what is you're hoping to accomplish.
Well, everything's related, but the root cause of limitless federal power and federal government and federal overreach is money. And the root cause of the appearance or the illusion of limitless money for the federal government is limitless borrowing capacity. So what we're doing is we're trying to limit the federal government's borrowing capacity, put a limit on the credit card so they can stop stealing from future generations, enslaving future generations, and imposing or threatening to impose a tax or an inflation burden that no one can handle.
You know, when you said that, what popped in my head is you're going to limit the credit card, and I'm going, no, just get another credit card. You know, so I'm wondering, like we had the same thing here in the state where they, you know, in fact, I went to Arizona Supreme Court twice on just this one issue on the education, you know, overcharge of forwarding, check kiting, whatever the hell thing that they do, and they just reclassify a lot of the debt. They'll say, well, you know, that's a nice Taj Mahal for the Supreme Court building, but that's kind of a lease thing, you know. We're leasing, you know, then the entire military-industrial complex, we're leasing those tanks. It's not really a debt, you know. This kind of, I mean, it just goes to the butt, you know what I mean?
No, I think you're right. That's why we designed this as a spending limit. We limit the federal government to spending cash derived from taxes or only in full faith and credit borrowing. And those are the only sources of spending. And then we limit full faith and credit borrowing. So there's no way to create an exotic form of debt or cash flow that isn't either taxes or full faith and credit borrowing.
Okay, you heard it here first. There's no way no way that they're going to be. I'm going, there's a way, man. Well, I think what the best thing is your effort is a demonstration of the will of certainly your supporters and the people and the effort and the legislators and people going into and making a big deal out of, and this was the intent of, and then it may take them a decade or 2 years or whatever to start playing shenanigans with it. But tell us what the actual compact with these states, how it works. Tell us the whole concept and idea and why you structured it the way you did and what you hope will happen.
All right. Well, as you know, the Constitution allows for amendments. We've done 27 amendments so far. Each one of them has been proposed by Congress. There's also another way of obtaining amendments, and that is by application of state legislatures for a convention. And the problem with that, of course, is that everyone wonders what that means, and it's not spelled out in the Constitution, and a lot of folks are fearful that the process would run out of control. So with a compact approach, we actually have the states agree up front in advance 38 states, the number you need for ratification, to the entire amendment process, so you know exactly what you're going to get. And then we build a number of safeguards into the process so it shuts itself down if anything goes haywire. And these safeguards are not just legal, they're political incentive-based as well, so that we're not just relying on the goodwill of our court system, which is dubious.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm giving you a chance. Well, we probably start off the next segment with some actual details of exactly what it says and so on. But the concept is that it comes from closer to the people. It's the state legislature. They call for the convention, but they don't want to. Everybody's all freaked out what might happen. So it's explain to me how the contract keeps the convention from going. We are now a fascist republic of socialist, whatever the heck.
All right. Well, nothing happens till 38 states agree to this contract. The contract has to be consummated. 38 states have to join it in 7 years or else it self-repeals. So you have real live political will backing it at a massive level that, you know, just from a crass political perspective is going to align most political ambitions with the outcome. The outcome that the compact specifies is not subject to debate. It has a specific balanced budget amendment in it. It has the rules for the convention in it. It designates who the delegates will be at the convention. It limits the number of delegates to no more than 3 per state. It limits the convention to no more than 24 hours. So there's a very easy way to assess if things are starting to go haywire. The first order of business mandated by the agreement is to vote those rules into place to limit 24 hours. If anything else happens, people involved in the compact, all 38 states, cannot participate. That means that if it does go haywire, somehow someone's going to have to extract about 16 of the 38 states to violate the agreement they just agreed to in the past 7 years. And that means that some Machiavellian's going to have to decide that that's more to their political interest than staying true to it. Now, the reality is that everything in politics can be abused. All you can do is hope that you can align the incentives correctly. The reality is that since this has to take place in 7 years, because everyone's agreeing in complete detail to what they're setting out to do, the political benefit from going along with the program is much greater than the political benefit of trying to impede it or to violate it. And the likelihood of peeling off almost half of the members to do the opposite thing is extremely low. And so that's the essential safeguard. Now,
hey, man, I just came from the Libertarian National Convention. They got a whole bunch of Robert's Rules of suspension of the orders of can I finish and, you know, I rise a personal privilege of point of information of I kind of just changed. You know what I mean? They just changed.
Yeah, and what the compact very clearly says is that the rules cannot be changed, that the convention will adjourn in 24 hours. The only possible exception to that is an emergency suspension based on a threat, but that requires the chairman to propose it, and it requires him to sustain that suspension over the objections of a majority of the attendees. So other than that, there's no other exceptions. There's no way to suspend the rules. There's no way to suspend the convention. Either it gets done in 24 hours or it doesn't. And here's the key thing. The reason why the bad guys, the folks who may want to disrupt it, won't mess with this is that in a 24-hour convention with up to 150 people participating and everyone wanting to say something, it's much easier to shut it down by filibustering. It's much easier to disrupt it, to, you know, throw an Occupy Wall Street thing at it and just shut it down to prevent it from doing anything than it is to try to peel off enough people to control the quorum.
Okay, and when we come back,
that's a key difference.
We're going to start getting into the details of it and what it would do and how. We'll be right back. Nick Dranius.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Wednesday, gold is $1 lower at $1,215 per ounce. Silver is even at $16.04 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $542. Robertson Roberts Brokerage has been helping customers with buying and selling physical precious metals for nearly 40 years. How can we help you? Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
No roads. Where we're going, where my freaking flying car. Okay, Nick Dranius, you know, we've had him on before, had lots of conferences. He's been focused on this issue one way or another for quite a while. He's president and executive director of Compact for America Educational Foundation, Inc., which is a 501c3 charity that focuses on educating citizens and statesmen about the power of interstate compacts to achieve constitutional amendments and other reforms. He also serves as board member of Compact for America, Inc., a 501c4, and as a civil liberties advisory council member for Our America Initiative. Also, I mean, he's got a lot of 501-somethings, all right? He was general counsel, constitutional policy director for Goldwater Institute here in Arizona, and we've known him for years and years and years. And he's always been very welcome, whether I in support or not, to come on and yak about it. So we're going to yak about it. The one thing off-air he was saying is that there has been a hearing in D.C. All right, wait. Hearing. All right, well, tell me about your hearing. All right, what happened in D.C. on this Compact for America, Nick?
Well, the cool thing about the compact is we don't just have a contract. We create a interstate agency to represent the states in their fight for a balanced budget amendment. And that agency, the Compact Commission, had its first full hearing with its three appointed commissioners, the Speaker Pro Tem from Mississippi, the former Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, and a sitting representative in Georgia, in the belly of the beast in Rayburn House office building. And what's significant about it is in order to get a hearing room in the House office building, we had to have at least some support from leadership in the Congress. And what we're finding is that a lot of these congressmen, you know, maybe not two-thirds of the House, but maybe as much as simple majorities, recognize they have a problem. They don't have the strength to cut off their addiction.
A majority of congressmen are thinking they got, we broke 50%, think there's a problem? Oh my God. When we got, you know, 4% of the people, you know, think, you know, have any favorable rating of Congress. 4%. The only people less than that are the media. I mean, it's just, 4%. I'm like, damn, and only 50% of them are seeing there's a problem? All right. So you got enough people saying, hey, man, we're going to let you, you know, get some street cred and have a meeting in our thing, and kind of we approve of you having a meeting. And the purpose of the meeting and the result of the meeting was what?
Well, the purpose is to get some pressure on the pending resolution in Congress that requires a simple majority, HDR 26, to approve, to activate the compact and get Congress out of the way. See, what we're trying to do with our amendment approach is get Congress out of the way early in the process, not wait till we're massing too much threat to them for them to put their back out and try to stop it. And so the goal of this was not only to legitimize our commission, which is already legitimate, but to legitimize it in the eyes of the, you know, the people who walk the halls of Congress, but also to funnel a lot of the excitement that results from it to supporting HCR 26, and that actually is set up for a hearing. We don't have an exact date yet, but it's been committed to be set up for a hearing by Congressman Trent Franks and Congressman Goodlatte. We're hopeful that it's going to be this month. If it's not this month, it'll likely be in the fall. But the bottom line is that in order to get this issue moving forward, we've got to get through the hurdle of Congress. We've got to prevent them from messing with the process. We want to do that early, get them out of the way early. We want to do it when we look like a birthday resolution, when we're all political upside, when we're not at all a threat to their power. And that way we can turn it to the states. and look for leadership in the states where there is a pathway to 38 states. We only need 34 more to get it done. And I say only because this has been done 23 times before. There are 23 compacts or uniform laws with 38 or more states. Now, they're not on amendments, but they're on politically controversial things very often. And some of those have been done in as few as 3 years. So once we get this thing turned over to the states where we don't have to worry about the ways that hand grenades could be thrown at it from Washington, then we can get the job done in as few as 2 or 3 years. And we've got to get it done in 2 or 3 years because the whole thing sunsets April 12, 2021.
But do they feel, you know, any of the pressure? Are they just giving it lip service for election year now? Or are they kind of, you know, we're going to for future America and we got to hurry up and get on it and states are starting to come on? What?
Well, yeah, I think it's a combination of the three. I'd say that the majority of the motive in Congress seems to be political, right? But not overwhelmingly so. And even if it is, we're trying to align their political interests with this outcome. We're trying to show them that, hey, even if you look at this crassly, this is to your benefit. And the polling data is there. People have wanted this at supermajority levels for 40 years. They've just been afraid of the process. And now that we have a safe way for the states to organize the proposal of a balanced budget amendment in 24 hours within 7 years, then that gets people excited. What I'm really hopeful about is that the rules chairman, Congressman Pete Sessions, behind the scenes has been very instrumental in getting us that hearing room and fighting through some minor snafus that we've had. The rules chairman is effectively the second most powerful person in the House. The speaker, obviously, is the most powerful, but the rules chairman decides what gets to the floor, and we think that he's very supportive, and his team is very supportive. His chief of staff is very supportive, in addition to Congressman Franks, who's also supportive. And then, of course, the 20 sponsors we have. Now, we want to get up to 50 to 100 sponsors to be more politically meaningful. But look, I mean, what's interesting is that Congress is increasingly recognizing it has a problem. It's increasingly open to the idea of looking to outside intervention. It may be a fleeting moment. It may be just a flash in the pan, but that's why we want to be sitting on the floor of Congress or fighting in the halls in Congress when that flash exists so we can get it done.
Okay, so we got a flash. Well, this flash is going to, that's what you're building up to. Is this going to be off election year or right after the election year, or kind of give something people talk about in gubernatorial races and the local, the congressional, I'm running for kind of. See, I can feel the politics in this, you know. It's kind of a Grover Norquist tax signing thing, you know. So you're going to make this a conservative requirement of, yeah, well, what is your position on the debt compact, blah blah blah. That's what you're hoping for, I would imagine.
Well, as a C3, we can't get that directly involved, but you know, stuff like that will happen.
Hey,
organically.
I see a whole bunch of C4 crap here, man.
Yeah, our C4 does a few things, but it's not, even C4s are limited. You know, we're not a pack. What we want to see is things that are more organic. You know, Grover Norquist has endorsed us. Judge Andrew Napolitano has endorsed us. You know, Steve Moore just joined us as our national spokesman. He's endorsed us.
All right, Moore? Why do I care about Steve Moore? Who's that?
Oh, he used to be the editor-in-chief over at the Wall Street Journal. He started the Club for Growth.
Oh, well, crap! I got to listen to what he says. Well,
it's not about us, man. It's about the folks that we're pitching, right? They want to see political upside in what we're doing, and we're feeding them everything they need to see for political upside. Now, the merits are with us. Saving the country is with us. Saving our kids is with us. But in the end, you know, we've got to make the political sale first. And we can't do it directly as a C3, but we can let other folks do it for us.
All right. I'm looking at this. Let's say we go through the process. You know what? We should talk about the process. When we come back, we're going to go through this process. How do the states get involved with it? What do they propose? How is it voted on? Where is it said that this state's for or against? How do they have, you know, it called? Who's in the way? What are they doing preemptively now to keep it from being stopped when they want to have the convention and get voted in the 24 hours and America's safe? And my thing is, I'm going, okay, what about our current debt now? Does that get repudiated, replaced, you know, a refi on America? Our grandkids paying what? All right, we'll get to all that when we come back. Okay, I got to tell you about, all right, what was your perception in the media? I mean, because I was there, and, you know, so what was the perception of the Libertarian National Convention? What was the one thing that sticks out in your mind, or two or three things?
Well, I think the guy getting naked is
Of course! Of course! That was awesome! All right.
I mean, it's sad because I think, you know, again, I'm the C3, I can't participate in this sort of discussion, so let me take my hat off, put my C4 hat on, and then also speak as Nick. The reality is, I think this is the most plausible year for the Libertarian Party to win. I mean, it doesn't mean they're likely to win, but it's the most plausible year for them to win. And so it's natural the media would marginalize everything with a naked fat guy.
You know, this is, as we're sitting there, you know, everybody is going, oh, they're just head down, you know, hanging head. And the only thing that we were concerned about was two things. One, did he have a freedom of expression, you know, kind of a theme of whatever, and kind of lightly, not enough. The other thing was that he had 10 minutes. We're like, is he going to use his whole 10 minutes, really? I mean, you know, can we nip this in the bud a little bit? So then I'm going, okay, hold on a second. Yeah, go ahead. Have him come on. So what happened was they do the he gets up there, he does the thing, and it's kind of fun for a while, and it's embarrassing. I know the Republican types, they were freaking out, you know. So all the libertarians is like, yeah, this is like, you know, same old, what's the difference? Well, at least he didn't go totally naked, but, you know, they might as well have been. So we're sitting there, whatever. Well, what is it? Well, the next convention in 2 years is in New Orleans. I see the meme all over. Libertarian Party, party, man, they partay. We got naked. I'm going to see the memes all over the place promoting the next convention. We're going to have us some fun. The other thing was, is that if it wasn't that, it would have been the schism between the delegates and the 50-point-whatever% it took to get Bill Weld the VP nomination. And I'm going, you had your choice. It was going to be making fun of Weld, or it's going to be making fun of the naked guy at the Libertarian National Convention. And that was the number one story it was going to be, was the Weld thing and the opposition the people had and the boos of whatever. The fact they had a naked zombie dancing, that was served everybody's purpose and distraction. Look at this hand over here. I guarantee it. So didn't see it as that big a deal. The thing is that, of course, they'll try and do it. But it's advertising. You know, those guys, Libertarian Party, man, they still party. And the other thing was, is that he got up, he did it, nobody tackled him, nobody died. It wasn't that big a deal. You know, they go, oh, you know, you're not allowed and you shouldn't, and now it's quit it, and so on. But then you had the Republican types getting up. I move that we have a resolution to skin that guy alive on national television. Go get some. You know, and everybody's like, oh, let it go, man. Just chill. So it was a really good education for everybody there. And in the end, I think it kept the libertarians light when you have and that was the one thing that was the most successful part of this convention, was that the radicals got to have their say. Not that I equated him with, you know, that, but, you know, they got to have their say. And instead of it just being now the libertarians are Republican with two Republican governors, I'm going, if that was the message that came out, which I know makes you feel warm and fuzzy, but for a lot of the people, that was the number one thing that they did not want to happen. It was split like right down the middle, and it took everything they could to get enough people in there to make sure that Gary and Weld got in, and they just barely made it. So everybody kind of got their representation, which is, you know, why you had all five. The presidential debate was awesome. Everybody got their say. I felt no nota from Arizona. It's the first time that's happened in 25 years I've been doing this, that there wasn't a nota vote on the first round. All right, here we go.
And .fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay, Nick Gradius. Nick Gradius, Compact on America. I mean, for America, okay? So we're going to have this Compact for America, you know, and just so I hope it's not on us. You know, that was kind of the contract, you know, with on America, Newt Gingrich 94, kind of, you know, seriously, that just, you know, we can go on and on about that. But it's the same kind of crowd. We're going to get our financial house in order. Now, how they're going to do that is the two things that we had preemptively. You had a hearing in D.C. that was kind of, you had to have, you know, House leadership allow you to be in a room. If you got a room, you can have a meeting. You got a couple of press and kind of, you know, it's the beginning of making the rules in such a way to kind of block the House of Representatives from blocking your convention or calling it or something. Kind of sum that up for me in 15 seconds, will you please?
Yeah, in order for the compact to work, you got to get 38 states to reach this agreement, but you also have to Congress passing a simple majority resolution activating the agreement. And basically the resolution just says we're calling the convention in accordance with that compact, we're getting out of the way, and we're allowing legislatures to ratify the amendment. So we want to pass that resolution on the congressional side early, when we're not at 38 states, when we're not at 25 states, when we're 4 states like we are right now, because we don't want to be perceived as a political threat. We want to be perceived as a political benefit. We want Congress to say, hey, I can vote for this resolution. It doesn't threaten me directly. I might be out of office. I might be the president. I don't have to worry about when the states get to 38 states. But in the meantime, I can say I'm for a balanced budget amendment. I'm for state sovereignty. I'm for state leadership. I'm for cutting off the addicts from their source of addiction. And so that's essentially the pitch. All we require is some minimal humility from congressmen to let the states lead on this issue when it is nothing but political upside for them. And that's the goal.
Okay. Now, you kind of run over it like we understand what you're talking about, so I need to ask some questions. When you get the states, enough states to call this, they say, all right, we're done, what you're trying to do is preempt the ability of Congress to stop it, not put it, you need to get more detail on what you're talking about, because I don't understand, you know, what the mechanism by which you would call the convention or that they would prevent the convention. So what you're saying, the change that you're making is prevent Congress or force them to what?
Well, let's take a step back and look at the Constitution without this process.
Wait.
What the Constitution says is when 2/3 of the state legislatures petition to Congress for a convention, Congress shall call the convention. And if the convention proposes an amendment, then Congress shall select the mode of ratification, how it's ratified, whether it's by a state legislature or in-state convention, Congress controls it. And if you look at the Constitution...
Okay, wait. Stop. Let's go right back to that.
Yep.
They control with these two options, or they can say any way they draw straws, throw darts, roll dice. I mean, you know, I'm wondering, you know, how, because you're saying, no, they have to this and they have to that. I'm like, you know, where's all this wiggle room come from?
Yeah. So Congress is required, it shall call the convention when 2/3 of the states petition for one. But Congress, you know, sometimes ignores the Constitution. Congress might get cute and say, yeah, I'll call the convention, but we'll run it, right? So there's the reality, and then there's the intention. The intention is clear. Congress is supposed to call the convention automatically and get out of the way and let the states lead. But the reality is, because you have Congress in a position of control, in a position of leverage, there's no telling what Congress might do on the front end. And then on the back end, even if we got to a convention, and even if we had a good amendment proposed, then Congress still controls the mode of ratification. It can sit on it, maybe never refer it out for ratification. It can put a sunset and say, you got to get it ratified in 4 months. Try doing that in 38 states, right? And it can select either legislatures or conventions to ratify. And sometimes, you know, you can't get something done through an in-state convention that you could get done through a legislature and vice versa. That's why they did the repeal prohibition through conventions, not legislatures, because they knew they didn't have the votes in the legislature. So Congress has two significant points of leverage. They're supposed to play along with the process. They're supposed to, you know, yield to it, to be the handmaiden of the states and give the people what they want. But obviously they have the power at two junctures to say no, or to mess with it, or to derail it. And so what we're trying to do is say, you know what? Let's not wait and see what Congress does at those two junctures. Let's get Congress to commit to what they're going to do in both of those junctures ahead of time before we get there, and get them out of the way. So that's the resolution that's pending in Congress. We're getting Congress to agree to call the convention in accordance with this compact, and we're getting Congress to agree to select legislative ratification in accordance with the compact. And we're doing that in one resolution. We're passing it with 51%, 50 plus one, of Congress, of each House of Congress, and then they're out of it. Then if they're going to mess with the process, they have to repeal this resolution. And repealing things, even at simple majorities, is very difficult. It's always easier to it's relatively easier to defend something than it is to actually get it passed. So once we get it passed, it'll be easier to defend it. It'll be hard politically for people to justify fighting against a balanced budget amendment.
Okay, now let me go ahead and we haven't got to the next part yet. Now they go, all right, fine, you get to have your whatever. Now they're saying this to whom? I mean, who's going to be chair of the convention? Who's going to order? Who's going to do the rules? Who's going to vote on how to count word and nuts and bolts and
it's
details
turnkey,
of we meet at this one place?
It's all turnkey. It's all spelled out in the compact. You can go to our website, compactforamerica.org. Go to our legislative page. You'll see it. The chairman is the governor of Georgia right now. It's Governor Nathan Deal. He's the compact commission, which is formed, which has the former lieutenant governor of Alaska, a sitting legislator from Georgia, the speaker pro tem of Mississippi, is the oversight agency that keeps everything on track. The rules are specified word for word in the compact. You can read them. So, what they're yielding to is a contract in complete detail to everything, all the logistics, all the substance, all the content, all the procedures spelled out in advance in this agreement.
Okay, so let me ask one question. You know, in this agreement, it's going to say, thou shalt, meet at some place to be determined by whom? I mean, is it already where we're going to go to hotel?
It says that Dallas, Texas is the location of the convention. It says that the convention must be held within 6 weeks of 38 states being joining the compact.
And Dallas is why? Just because it's kind of centrally located and you still assume Texas will be part of the union by then?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. And, since it sunsets on April 12, 2021, we think that the current makeup of the court system in Texas will be relatively the same. And if so, that means it's a very constitutionalist court system compared to other options like the Ninth Circuit. So if there were to be any litigation, we want it there. The second thing is very easily accessible. We don't want to have people going to Juneau, right? We want people to easily get there from 50 states because it's a 24-hour convention. Everything is mapped out in military like precision, so we want everyone there on time, get the job done, and go home.
Okay, now who makes up the delegations? Now, what'd you say, three people per state?
Well, the default setting is a signing governor, but every state can tailor that to up to three delegates of their choice. So it could be Mickey Mouse, it could be Donald Duck. But what we've seen is out of the four states, two states have chosen to send their legislative leadership to the House and the Senate president, the House Speaker and the Senate president, and then a minority leader as their three delegates. Another two states have sent their governors. Alaska and Georgia are sending their governors. Georgia, because it was the first state, is designated the chairman, and that means Governor Deal is the chairman. Now, does that mean Governor Deal is a perfect man? No, but at least we know the political quantity that we're sending there.
Okay, what is his politics? I mean, what are we dealing with here? He goes, I want to be first, so I can screw you? I mean, what?
Yeah, he's a moderate Republican type, Southern Republican. He's done a lot of good things. He's done a lot of bad things.
So what is moderate? You see, I'm talking to Nick Dranius, Goldwater Institute, Cato Cokie, kind of whatever crap, and I'm going, your definition of who's kind of moderate and mine are two totally freaking different things. So I'm just, explain to me what makes him good or bad.
Well, if you got him fully scripted like we have in this compact and he's not a whole lot of wiggle room for him, he's just fine. Look, the reality is everyone's agreeing up front in advance to what this thing's going to do. A guy like Nathan Deal has to decide, is it more in his political interest to go along with the program or to fight it? And the reality is because this is all in real time, because it all sunsets in April 12, 2021, it's going to be very foolish politically for him to decide to do the opposite of what he just signed off on.
All right. Well, politically, what about financially?
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Okay, what else do you want to make sure we get into? We got the actual convention part. We know who the chair is going to be. Is there a location set? Oh, yeah, Dallas. So, I mean, how detailed the location? It's just in Dallas, and then who's the convention committee and all that crap?
Well, the commission handles everything as the oversight logistics coordinator. So the commission has to decide.
So the commission, they go, the commission. Well, who's the commission? Ah, we'll make that up later. I mean,
no, it exists right now. This is who we just had a hearing with, and the three guys who make it up are serving for 7 years.
Who are these three guys?
Meade Treadwell, Lieutenant Governor, former Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, solid, you know, conservative Republican, as solid as they are, at least. And then the Speaker Pro Tem of Mississippi, Greg Snowden. He's also an attorney. He's really, you know, philosophically, when it comes to fiscal issues, right on, right on the right side of everything. And then Representative Paulette Rakestraw. She's, sort of a younger, up and coming woman, entrepreneur, legislator. I'd say that when it comes to fiscal issues, she's solid as anybody comes. So they're in charge of the commission.
Okay, now let's go. You keep saying that, fiscally solid as. I mean, what makes them, you got to make a hedging a little bit on what, they smoke marijuana or something? I mean, you know, what is the criteria for your crowd to be like, these are good guys? Any hesitation, it's always some stupid crap that I don't care about, or is it something substantial?
I don't know the depths of their political philosophy enough to
okay,
say
so
that
so the people behind it, their political philosophy is what? Who is the financial support of this thing?
Well, so far we have been. We've granted all the money that the commission has used to operate.
Who's we?
Who's we? It's donors that we have.
Whose donors that we have?
Well, a lot of them want some privacy, but a couple don't mind if we tell. Our chairman, Tom Patterson, has been very generous. And so is
Tom
Jim Rodney.
Tom Patterson from here in Arizona?
Yeah, Dr. Tom Patterson. He used to be the chairman of the Goldwater Institute. He's our chairman now.
Well, that tells me everything I need to know right there. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about, I need to know the money and the philosophy and the people behind it and their motivation and why. You know, is it a Norquist kind of just, you know, a standard thing? Is it a real effort to save America thing? Is it a something? You got to help me out here, man. All right, we're coming back. Here we go.
Be glad to.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I believe.
Yeah, I just want to break free from your lies. Your lies. Okay, let's try and find out. We've been talking about, Nick has had this as a focus, you know, this financial constitutional amendment, federal government can't spend no more, kind of stop them in their tracks.
It's an anti-slavery amendment, Ernie. Come on.
Now. All right. You know, financial slavery is like, well, let's think about that. Okay, now you brought it up. You brought it up. I'm going, okay, my first question in any of these efforts, I always ask Nick, I go, all right, do my grandchildren owe this big debt that they already created? Is that like a refi on what we got now? Yeah, but pinky swear, it won't go any higher ever again because of whatever. But yeah, we're kind of got to pay our debt thing. You know, so I'm just like dead letter as far as I'm concerned, because my granddaughter does not owe any of this crap. So,
well, you know,
opinion,
what? You got to stop the bleeding, and then we can turn around and repeal the part of the 14th Amendment that guarantees repayment of the debt. That's a little bit of a tougher push. The reality is this: if we had capped the debt, the capacity to borrow back in 2006, when Barack Obama opposed lifting the federal statutory debt limit, if we had capped it like our amendment proposes, then we would have cut our debt burden in half. We probably would have prevented any expansion of wars. We probably would have caused the incentivization of shrinking a lot of needless military bases around the country. A lot of needless programs would not have expanded. Probably never would have seen TARP, never would have seen anything like the expansion of the Obamacare system. All those things were only made possible because of this limitless credit card. So don't poo-poo the power of just putting a limit on a limitless credit card. I mean, if you don't have a limit on a credit card and if you don't have to pay it back, you're going to do crazy stuff.
No,
stuff
this is a conversation. Congress is worse than, 19-year-olds that got their first credit card after high school because they got a student loan or by the time they're 24, they probably got four or five credit cards, and they go, oh, we're going to put a limit and you can't. And they go, let me tell you how creative I can get in spending me some money. All right. So I just, and then they, there's so many comparisons I can make, but the main thing, save time, I'm going, all right, the people behind their incentive for doing this, it's one of two things. Well, it's one big thing. They see it in their self-interest to advocate for this compact with America or on America, whatever the hell it is. I'm going, they're going to go ahead and say, we need to do this because why? I mean, the people, you mentioned Tom Patterson from here in Arizona. Wasn't Tom, he was head of the Goldwater Institute at one time. He's a state legislator, decent enough guy, but he's, he's carrying the water for somebody. Who?
He's not carrying the water for anybody. Who? Ernie, we're all motivated by saving our country, and, one of the things I'm pretty good at is identifying people with integrity, and that's why I enjoy speaking with you so much. We may disagree on the outermost extensions of our integrity, but I think we all have a core value system that's very similar. And I think that's true of everyone at Compact for America. And then, of course, with the Compact Commission, the agency that oversees this whole process, represents the states, goes mano to mano with Congress, the folks that are working there aren't making any significant cash. I mean, we've granted them maybe 70 or 80 grand over the past couple of years, but that's just mostly covering their travel expenses that they're squeezing in between real jobs. And frankly, the latest guy, the Speaker Pro Tem of Mississippi, hasn't charged us anything, hasn't charged the commission a dime.
That's piddly money. I mean, before you even get started, it's the, we're not even going to do anything until somebody, Daddy Warbucks, has a million, 3 million, 5 million, 10 million, make sure we can go through this 7-year process of somebody's filling out the paperwork. I get that, okay? And you're Mr. Attorney, if I'm going to do an advocate and I got a job for 7 years. I understand, okay?
I'm not interested in this as a job. Frankly, we've structured it so that whenever we're low on cash, below 100 grand in the bank, we don't get paid. There were a couple of months when we were like that. This is not about the cash. This is about saving the country.
No, that's not my point.
It's nothing to do with that.
That's not my point. My point is that this is just, before you even started, you're going to have people do it, and you want to make sure they got paid to even do it. It's a job. I'm going to do this job. Somebody's getting hired to do this job. You're not going to have anybody give you any more money until you got seed money to show that whatever they're investing in is going to continue till the end of the process. I get that. I'm not criticizing the money, okay? Spend whatever money to go do and kind of get it done. But somebody that ponies up that money to make sure that this gets done has to want it done. So I'm going, I want it done bad enough that I'm going to pay these guys to do it. Here's the cash. Here's the, we got the health care, and you got a rental car, the expenses of kind of whatever. However much that is, don't care. It's a national Save America, the empire of the universe, and kind of done, a few million dollars, piddly money. All right? That's not my point. My point is whoever would put that up is going to be one of two people. I'm patriarch American, and in my will I bequeath and did, and I'm the old lady of the widow of what's-his-face, and I see this as a great idea, Nick's Purdy, and he convinced me, and I part of my money and go kick ass. Or it's somebody, it's somebody else that sits there and goes, there is some political or financial benefit in the strategy for me having people sign on. Are you for or against this? Are you for or against it? Well, it's never good. I don't care if it goes for, it's like Norquist tax crap, okay? There is some benefit for somebody that's funding this. I want to know what it is, because we're Americans and we love grandchildren and stuff. I'm like, since when? So I'm just going, so you got to get behind the money, the seed money, the money, and help me understand why they're pushing this. And go.
All I can do is speak to one of our largest donors who's public, willing to be publicly identified, and that's Jim Rodney of the Rodney Fund. He's about 94 years old. And he's tired of seeing the direction the country's gone in. And he gave us the, you know, most of the initial seed money that we had, you know, high six figures. And his motivation is pure. He's got a large number of grandchildren. He's got only a few years left in his life. He was one of the guys who saw Detroit when it was the Silicon Valley of the country. He sees that it's not that anymore. He understands the role of the federal government's overreach and overgrowth as suppressing and destroying much of what Detroit was. He understands that the root cause of this is unlimited borrowing capacity, creates the illusion of unlimited resources that then propels the unlimited growth of the federal government. So he sees all these things. And so he's doing it because he wants to protect his family. He wants to protect his family's friends, and the networks to sustain everything that makes our country great. I mean, that's the kind of motivated donor that we have. And you know, even the smaller donors, I know each and every one of them in a personal way, not just Tom Patterson. And these guys are all motivated by saving the country. Look, John Hancock got behind the American Revolution against the most powerful empire in the world. That was a foolish financial investment. But he did it because he recognized the value of liberty. And there still are people like that.
Okay, what kind of repercussions are people like that, you know, expecting? Are they protected in some way? Or I'm 94 and I don't give a crap, you know?
A lot of them are, you know, Jim doesn't care about anything. And he'll fight back. He's not, you know, he's not feeble at his age even.
Well, you know, Nick, I got to tell the audience, you know, Nick is really good at, you know, this kind of presentation and rhetoric and appealing to an American kind of, and he has a good track record of actually delivering the spokesperson, be up front and make it kind of go work. And he's always been willing to come on and, you know, and pass through the gauntlet here on Declare Your Independence. So, Nick's a good guy to have on your side to do exactly this kind of thing. He never breaks character. I mean, it's like he is for this. He's going to be for it. And this is what he's going to advocate. Now, my next series of questions, one thing you can just help you monologue me is that, okay, who are you reaching out to? What demographic is it you think it's going to give you the support? Is it Tea Party? Is it Libertarians? Is it everybody? Is it Trump people? We got a whole bunch of, you know, progressive Clintonistas on your side? Or, you know, oh, I got to tell you this. At the convention, somebody did a speech and they called Clinton and Trump the clump. Yeah, well, the clump is this and the clump says that. And the clump, I'm going, you know, I'm going to hit myself for not thinking of that first, you know. But the so the clump, are they supportive of this at all? Or you got, so I'm wondering what your target, you know, for support of this in the just the public opinion arena.
Look, I hate to say it, Ernie, you're only a small part of our target market. I mean, we got to get to 38 states. That means we do need the clump. We need everyone who's not interested in crashing and burning the country, who's not interested in just, you know, enslaving future generations. We need all people of goodwill, left, right, and center. And there are enough of them to make it happen. But we do need your help, Ernie. We need more millennials. I mean, the younger folks out there who are the ones being enslaved seem to have the least interest. So anything you do to help on that front,
I'm more than willing. Compact on a, with America. God, let me get, I got me so messed up here. Compactforamerica.org. Compactforamerica.org. And I just want to make sure that these young guys, I'm not steering them into another just, you know, brain damage kind of whatever thing. And because I believe in what I saw at the Libertarian National Convention, they're just waiting for the collapse and what's going to happen next. You know, they go, yeah, but America will be saved and the flag will be different. And they're like, you're confusing me with somebody that cares. There's borders. I mean, you know, so it's a whole different mindset. Nick is giving them a way out. Save America. Save America. Go check out compactforamerica.org. They got a plan, and it's a short time period, so maybe we might get something done. There you go. All right.
That was awesome.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. We got everything out and somebody, and they go look and get some interest to something. So how is it looking in the media with all of the presidential stuff? Has it started to penetrate at all in any campaign or awareness? Or are you getting any attention?
Not in the media. The media is swamped with presidential politics. You know, we've got regional media, local media. You know, those things always seem to be interested. But what's interesting is one of our lobbyists in Oklahoma is actually Trump's ground guy, so we've gotten some weird outreach from a bunch of presidential candidates, not just Trump. We had Jeb's people reaching out to us earlier, you know, didn't go anywhere. But you know, there is and it's probably for crass political reasons, but there does seem to be some interest in this issue, some interest in our approach to it.
Well, you'll take some crass support. I mean, you know, that's all
I'll
good.
Take what I got.
You know, this, oh, we did at one of the guys. All right, this is Saturday, Friday or something before I went, you know, a few days before I went to the LP convention. I was there, I don't know, like 4 or 6 days, whatever. So he goes like this, $100 in Bitcoin saved the planet. And I go, all right, give me your idea. I'm always a soft touch for that. So we did these signs. They're just handheld signs. You're like, you know, 10 inches high by, you know, 18 inches wide. You know, got something on there. And it said, I'm already against the next war. Okay. So I went with a bunch of these signs, got all the candidates, everybody holding it on their chest. And during debate, I'm slipping it up on camera. And I'm like, you need a compactforamerica.org. You get in the conventions, a little something, something slip into the, because once you penetrate with signs and it's up there, no, what is that? Now go check. You know, then it becomes, you know, even more crass. They're wanting some political advantage or whatever. You got to get some street activism, man. Get on TV with your signs and stuff. Oh, and
we need all the help we can get, Ernie.
Well, see, this
we
is,
should sit down, have a beer or a cup of coffee, and let's talk about it.
Well, give me a week or two. There's a whole bunch of debriefing stuff and convention and campaign, and there I got 15 gazillion meetings, and then, you know, next week we might. And I'll bring this up as part of, you know, we can talk about and who might and something because I love you. But the thing is that I'm just not into this refi for my grandkids.
Refi. Look, if we had succeeded 10 years ago, as I showed you the numbers, we would have stopped TARP. We would have stopped Obamacare. We would have stopped the expansion of the Iraq war. I mean, this is real-time stuff. And the reality is this. It took 70 freaking years for the Soviet Union to collapse, and we're not even half as bad as they are yet. So it could be 150 years before you get to your next stage, and I'm not going to be alive for
that. Shoot, it's going to be freaking one Monday pretty soon. We're going to wake up and go, what the hell just happened?
I don't want to risk it's going to be 150 years like the Roman. I mean, how many years did it take for the Roman Empire to fizzle out?
I don't think we're going to, you know, I think the, you know, communication is going to ramp this speed up. You know, the one thing I wanted to say, I go to every can, even Weld. I mean, all these guys, yeah, they hold the sign. Take the picture. It's part of a big campaign that we're doing that'll be Armistice Day is right after the election. Dear President-elect, we're already against the next war. Then you have Students for and the Young American, whatever, Liberty people are doing a thing in February after inauguration that they're doing with all these pictures that morphed into. So it's a long campaign thing that we started. So the thing with antiwar.com, but the only person that wouldn't hold that sign, they won't surprise you. He goes, I go, hey, Bob. Bob Barr said, no, I'll pass. The only person that wouldn't hold that sign, I'm already against the next war. And I'm going at the convention. And I'm going, yeah, I'm so not surprised.
I should tell you that Gary Johnson, C4, was an early supporter of the Compact for America effort.
Of course he was. What do you think this whole Weld thing is about? You think I don't understand what's going on, man? I'm sitting here watching it happen. You know, I'm going, yeah, okay. He was Gary was like on his knees begging for Weld to get the VP, and he made it 50.5 to 49. I mean, it was a squeaker, man.
You know, I think it was at BU when Weld got elected, or maybe it was right after I left, but the guy was not impressive. I mean,
he's counsel on this and secret handshake, tall white boy of whatever, you know, and they even have one of the a woman running for VP, her name is Alicia Derns, that had been an attorney, a young, articulate, really had her crap together, working for Gary's 12 campaign, and she's running for VP. She gets up there, and they really bid the full court press on her. All the other candidates, I mean, they were just pressing everybody, promising them sun, wind, moon, and stars if they would endorse Weld. Well, she gets up there, and she says, in her speech to be VP, she goes, well, in the second round, she goes, or it was concession speech after she had dropped off or something. And they usually suspend the rules and let the last person that dropped off get to make a speech, endorse kind of crap. So she gets up there and she says, well, I call Bill up. Governor Weld, come on up here. Now, will you tell the people, because he had started as a libertarian in 06 to get libertarians ballot status in New York. Republicans gave him a lot of pressure. He pulled out, screwed the libertarians. So they already see him as a backstabbing an SOB anyway. So this is all not a secret to the convention. Alicia gets up, has him standing there on the podium. National television, could you please tell the people that you won't stab him in the back? I've been a card-carrying libertarian. I joined the National Party for a life member of. I'm kind of. Yeah, but will you tell them that you won't stab them in the back? I'm a libertarian. I was the first libertarian. I got my card libertarian. And we're sitting there pounding the table going, we did this in 96 in Washington, the old thing on Harry Brown about taking federal matching funds. And we're going, say it, say it, say it, say it. I mean, he would not say it. I couldn't freaking believe it. And I'm going, okay. You know, it was a very awkward moment. So I, you know, yep, I know, you know, Weld's deal. That's why Naked Zombie Dancing was the message that came out of the Libertarian Party, which was much better than the story of how Weld got the nomination, all the other stuff. So everybody's bitching, whining, and moaning. You know, that was the distraction that Weld and Johnson needed. They didn't have that. This whole other thing would be the top story. So I'm going, you guys lucked out. Hell, he planted them. Hey, thanks, Nick. You know, good luck with it. We'll go ahead and Donna will set up a lunch in the next 2 weeks. You going to be around for a while?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And that'd be great.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll but give me a couple of weeks because I got a bunch of postmortem stuff on, you know, after the convention and people, and I give you a better beat on what's going to happen here too. Got all kinds of lawsuits and stuff and stuff. All right, man. Talk to you later, Nick. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
See you, man.
Bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, FM to B, EAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, Freedoms Phoenix, .com. Ooh, that was a good one. All right. You know, Dick Dranius from the CompactForAmerica.org. You know, he's like, Ernie, man, we need the millennial. We need your help. We got to get the youngins and kind of, you know, save America, financial save America. And I'm going, you know what? I got you hooked up, man. I got you hooked up. Nick, if you're listening, man, I tell you, here's the guys you want to get. It is, you know, the Libertarian Youth Liberty Caucus of we're going to kick your butt and we're young. I mean, you know, so I'm going, all right, this is what we're going to go ahead and do. We're going to be talking to Trent Soames. Now, he gave me a pronunciation of it. Soames. Yeah, I think I did it right. All right. Trent Soames, he's 18. He's upcoming, you know, a senior at Penn Trafford High School. As a 17-year-old, Soames started his local Libertarian Party affiliate, Westmoreland County Libertarian. Soames was the Pennsylvania coordinator for Austin Peterson. Now, Austin ran a youth campaign of social media for President of the United States of America at 35. And he did an impressive job. He did, I think, you know, guys with history. I mean, you don't want to get in the middle of the enthusiasm of young people doing whatever they're going to do because they're going to do it and you don't know how to do it and we're going to do it different and it's our turn to do and shut up, we're going to do. So you just stand out of the way and you just let them do. But you just you know, just want to, you know, give them a voice, let them have their say, and they learn. You know, they'll figure out what, you know, a lot of times the biggest thing you can do is teach them the power of principle and no compromise. And once they get that under, they see what a big giant arrow that is in their quiver of butt kicking, then they're going, yes, I understand. Now, Soames is also the national chairman of Libertarian Youth Caucus. He just recently at the Libertarian National Convention, he was elected the Libertarian National Committee to the National Committee as an alternate. Now, I was in the LNC meeting there and so on. You know, what they have is the Libertarian National Committee, and then they have also elected alternates, you know, that kind of fill in when some of those can't make it or whatever. He's 18. He's on the Libertarian National Committee. I'm going, that's good for your resume. You know, I'll keep that one. Then we have, he enjoys hanging out with family and friends and so on. And he plays the mandolin. You know, he's involved in church and an Eagle Scout. I mean, crap. Do we want to have this guy on our list of with his resume of whatever? I would imagine so. You know, all right, Trent Soames. Am I saying it right, Soames?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, I win. All right, let's go ahead and talk about this. Now, one of the slides Donna has up here is the Radical Caucus. You guys are teamed up with the Radical Caucus. Are you guys radical enough to be with the Radical Caucus?
So, yeah. Well, first off, thank you so much for having me on the show. We teamed up with the Radical Caucus to get youth rights added into the Libertarian Party platform. That's one of our points. That's actually the only political point that we have in the Youth Caucus, is to get youth rights added to the platform.
Well, did you guys make an attempt? Did it get added? Was there something? I didn't get in all the detail of sitting, ouch, quit it, kind of finish point of order stuff. I mean, did it get added, anything?
No, it didn't get added, but we did shoot down one of the planks that was suggested to basically take away youth rights. We got that shot down. I went up onto one of the mics. And
what were they trying to do? What were they trying to do?
It was basically saying that children, since they're not born with the perception of or like the awareness of their rights, basically they won't be given them until they're 18, and that authority will be placed into their parents.
I want to make this comment. You know, this is a good thing for your audience, and I know it'll be listening. It'll give you a little history add to this. When I was young, I'm in my late 20s, early 30s, and I'm starting going to national conventions and everything, I was shocked by one thing. How freaking passionate, I mean, to the point of violence, it was about the children right, young right, youth right thing in the Libertarian platform, to where the state determined age of consent. Now, this is where you get into all this underage, sex stuff, is how they'll call it. But that really wasn't the issue. That's just a smokescreen for it. What the real issue was, and as I paid attention over the years and I talked to the people and the first time and they're screaming in the aisles about this very issue that you're talking about, it came down to this. It was abused children. It was when you were, 6 to 12 to 15 years old, courts would normally just, you always go with your mom, or you're going back with the parent, or we're going to send you the foster children and this uncle kind of whatever, or a neighbor that loved you, or a teacher, or a coach that was willing to adopt you, or whatever. You got no say. It just, you went into the system, you're awarded the state now of whatever the heck. And these kids, when they were 8, 9, 10 years old, they knew exactly what was going on. No, don't send me to my grandfather. He's the son of a bitch that, molested my dad that molested me. Why are we? So they wanted to assert children's rights to be able to have some kind of say in their future, especially when you had dysfunctional families and so on. So they found principally their best home in the Libertarian Party, and they came and they made this argument of consent of the child, of someone that was under the age of consent that the state put at 18. So the passionate arguments, they go, look, I got screwed. Literally, as 9 years old, and I knew where the hell I wanted to go and where I didn't want to go, and I had no rights or power for me to make any assertion for my life, and that has to change. I'm doing this for the next kid, a generation of whatever. That's why this issue is so passionate to so many people, but it applies to a bunch of other stuff, which includes, hey, like my granddaughter. She's not even born. I got billboards up. Hey, how does she own this TARP debt? How did that happen? That's what we were talking about with the national debt and everything in the hour preceding you. So this is a much more hotly contested issue over a period of decades than I think you realize. And if you get to the right people and kind of talk about different, there's all kinds of different arguments, then we'll get you hooked up in the pass. And next time in New Orleans, 2018, we're going to party because libertarians get naked on stage.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's our only political issue. All of our other issues are just about youth outreach and getting the Libertarian Party geared up to actually go out and talk to youth about libertarianism, because we kind of suck at it at this point.
Well, it's a lot of it has always been books. It's always the computer nerd. It's always the political nerd. It's always the, you know, kind of, you know, but it's changing. All of a sudden, you know, it's getting cold. And that's one thing that was really supportive of Judd Weiss's videos, you know, let life live, hashtag, you know, be a libertarian or something. You know, we're going to have some fun here in Arizona with that. We're having meetings already, so I got to tell Nick, hold off a couple of weeks because we got a plan and we're going to do where it really counts is in the minds of the people. But what we want to talk about is your effort. It's the Libertarian Youth Caucus, and what got my interest is not the organization of you got paperwork and stuff. We'll talk about that. I'm like, gag me with a forklift. But your goal is that you're trying to have a structure that will reach down into high schools. And you're a senior. So I'm going, all right, so tell me about your structure and what your goal and what you're doing.
Okay, so,
15 seconds too late. We're going in the break. when we come back, that's where we'll start. You know, we got to say, yo, what's up to Trent. But real quick, in a few seconds we got here, you know, where are you going to school? Where are you from?
Well, I'm from I'm from a little town 30 minutes outside of Pittsburgh called Tim Trafford. I'm looking at the colleges right now. I'm not really sure. I've obviously got a commitment to the Libertarian Party now. So I've got to stay within my region, but that's it.
Yeah, I'm like, man, don't go into debt. I mean, don't spend a bunch of money on stuff that don't matter. You might be better off than, I don't know. We'll talk about it. We'll be right back.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Wednesday, gold is $1 lower at $1,215 per ounce. Silver is even at $16.04 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $542. Robertson Roberts Brokerage has been helping customers with buying and selling physical precious metals for nearly 40 years. How can we help you? Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
Okay, Trent, we're going to need to make some notes on exactly when to make sure you get in some, you know, stuff. And the first thing is contact and webpage stuff. So,
all right. Well, they can go on our website, LY.
No, we'll do it. We'll do it on air. I'm sitting here making notes. Okay, do the webpage, other contact. We're going to get into who started and why. And
let's talk about school clubs a little bit. I want to talk about that.
What, school clubs?
Yeah.
Okay. Who started by contact, school clubs. And then eventually you're going to have to justify this structure FEC fine pack crap, you know? So we'll get into that. Because I had that guy Panda on. There was a same kind of thing, started a, you know, whatever. And I'm going, let me tell you what you're going to run into. It's going to be this, you know, we're going to beat up their collective with our collective against collectivism, you know, kind of thing. And I'm just, it's always a central plan if you send it to and do. So you got to give me the benefits of the structure and why you're doing it that way. All right, here we go.
Yeah.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
There is a love. the weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people gets colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive when love is found. Now ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love?
Right here on Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock. Oh, and some revolutionary individuals. Trent Soames. Trent Soames, lycaucus.org. Lycaucus.org. Libertarian Youth Caucus. All right. Now they got a structure. They got a plan. They're going to, they got paperwork and, bank accounts and stuff and everything. And we're going, they're going to do it for us. And somebody else, God hopes, freaking somebody else filling out the freaking paperwork. I know I'll be doing my paperwork, so they're going to do the paperwork. All right. So let's go ahead and talk about, several things as we get into the structure of this. Who started it and why? And why did they structure it in such a way that's an FEC filing? So let's go ahead and start right there. Trent, go.
Okay, so at the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania Convention, Jeff Mitchell, Robert Clark, and myself, who are just three youth at the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania Convention, got together and we were like, wow, we're the only young people here. Let's go hang out. And while we were talking to Governor Johnson, we were like, hey, we should start something that helps candidates reach out to youth.
Okay, now which because convention was this?
When or where?
Which convention? You didn't just plan this at this last convention. Which convention was this?
Oh, no, this was last convention. This is how fast we've grown in such a short amount of time.
So 2 years ago.
No, last year. This year, in March.
Okay, in what state?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania State Convention, is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay.
Libertarian Party Pennsylvania Convention.
Okay, whew, rewind. Year ago, at the Pennsylvania State Libertarian Party Convention,
yes.
Gary Johnson was there speaking to him, whatever. You and a couple of guys that are young, we're going to do something. All right, go.
Yeah, so we said, let's just do this. So we all went home, and we started a Facebook page. We made a cool logo, and we were on our way. And that's how it started. We made a charter kind of explaining what we were about and what our goals were, and then we started to attack each one of those goals.
Okay, now who or what did the goals? I mean, there's always a guy. I think I met one of the guys. There's a guy that's got, I got a computer and I like doing paperwork and, and filing forms and stuff. So that guy that was doing that, where did that come from? Is his dad an accountant or something, or he just?
No, actually, I was the one that did that. I was the one that wrote the charter. And then the board voted on it, and they approved it. And then I was also the one that filed as a PAC, just because, and I know you're going to ask me about this later, but I filed as a PAC, and so I was the one that did that. Yeah, my dad's not an accountant or anything. I just yeah.
Okay, but why? Why the PAC? Something had to influence. You even knew that there is such a thing as a PAC. I mean, why would you go, let's go to the federal government to create this national organization if we want, the reason I asked this is that's what I'm trying to get out of the minds of Generation Next, is this default position that you're looking in the what used to be the blue pages of the phone book for what government agency to go ask permission. I'm just right. Even did that is like brain damage. I'm wondering why you thought to even do that. Who put that seed in your head?
So if Governor Johnson does end up being a huge political force, and that's who we want to start helping, is Governor Johnson. We don't want the reason that he gets sued or that we get sued to be because we didn't spend 5 minutes online filing a piece
of
paper.
Okay. Now, see, you're right there. You just exposed what it is. We were operating from a position of fear. We were afraid that somebody's going to do something, so we need a government protection slip of we get to do it, right?
Maybe if you want to look at it like that.
That's exactly how I look at it. So the first thing is the fear. So you're trying to be practical with this. Let's go ahead and kind of, they've convinced us that we need to have a piece of paper. So we're going to go get their stupid piece of paper and we'll fill out their paper. So you find out that to be able to do whatever it is that you want to do, and we'll get into the details of that, you were best protected by having a 501c3-4 whatever, and file in the pack of the paper. Now we're covered there, and you can open up that does give you the ability. They'll open up a bank account now, and they want to see everything. It's everything. And so you got started, and how long did that process take you to fill out to get even started?
About 5 minutes.
Okay, so you filled out your paperwork, you start structuring, and do they want, when you do an FEC filing, they want like officers and a charter of some kind and pieces of paper, responsibility to somebody for something, right?
Yeah, kind of. So anyone can make a pack. It takes like 5 minutes online, and you can choose what type of pack you want to make and what and that kind of stuff. And like the original intent was to create transparency during elections, kind of like follow the money kind of thing. At least that's how I understand it.
Okay.
But that's, we have a bank account now. And we have consulted an elections lawyer. We're not really sure that we filed it the right kind. Because there is like different kinds and stuff, so we've consulted an election lawyer, and hopefully we'll get everything straightened out so that we don't get sued by anyone, and that we don't screw up Johnson Wells' ticket this year.
You become effective, they're going to sue you anyway. The only reason they don't sue you is just brings more attention. You know, if you get to, it's always what's the net benefit of suing or not suing. And when you get sued, that means that looks like you made it. I mean, so getting sued is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, you get a lot of attention, but you want to protect yourself. That's one reason why I don't like doing these. It gives you a head to go after. If you just do it, you know, who are they going to sue to stop the Levolution? I mean, how is that going to happen? You know, but I can see you're going to add it to where you could. Now I would do it. Pack, and we're still looking at different things that we would do, because the signs that we put up, we'd put up hundreds of signs a week during the Levolution. It was just, and they'd take them down, we put them back up, take them down, put up. We knew how the game was played. If I do a pack, well, then you have paid for, by, and support of, the kind of the whatever. Now you got legal signs up that you can put up and be somebody. So there are benefits or negotiations, and who wants to take the bullet in the front of to be able to do a pack.
Exactly. It also gives legitimacy. Like, if you say to someone...
All right, wait, again, I gotta slap you. We filed a federal PAC. It gave us legitimacy with what? Were you gonna have to explain that? See, it's all this infection. They get the splinter in their mind of, they'll be legitimate. You gotta have a shiny badge.
It's not infection. It's looking at it from people that don't have this point of view.
No, I understand. We'll talk about it. When we come back, you'll get to express yourself. And it gets you right on the edge of your seat for the break. Yeah, I mean, seriously, okay? When you say things like that, we needed legitimacy. I'm going, from whom, for whom? I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? So you're going to have to explain that one when we come back. Because I'm more interested in where that thought process even comes from. You know, it's I need you to, where that, why would you even think that? Where does that, come from? So when we come back, that's what we'll do, okay? And then we'll go on to all the other stuff.
All right, sounds good.
All right, we'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Rich now voices can't be heard. Just want to speak louder.
Libertarian youth Caucus. LYCaucus.org. They got a plan. They got a plan. We're going to work and talk about the plan. Now, the one thing I can just do you, the organization and the material that I get on them here, and it says, all right, the LYC, the Libertarian Youth Caucus, shall be governed by a board of directors. The board of directors shall be elected by a general consensus of all active members annually. The board of directors shall not exceed 15 members, but shall not be under 4. There shall never be more supporters on the board of directors than members. And we'll define supporter here in a second. The board of directors shall appoint other officers as they see fit. Amendments to this charter can be made by 3/4 vote by the board of directors. A member shall be defined as any person who is a dues-paying participant between the ages of 10 to 26, who shall also be a member of the Libertarian Party and shall be a citizen of the United States. A supporter shall be defined as any person who is a dues-paying participant or a person deemed by the board of directors to be worthy of honorary membership who is 27 or older. So this is the attempt is to make sure that you keep this a youth thing, and 27 is like the old guys. So
it's
going
to be a youth-run organization. We always want to be able to say this is a youth-run organization.
Now, we had a... one time, see, this is one thing that's different about the Libertarian Party. I remember years ago, there was, maybe it was Portland, 06. There was the youngest delegate to a national convention, and I think she was 13 or something. And do you remember that? Do you know the story?
Well, I don't know the story, but I know that this convention, there was also a member that was, a member that joined the Libertarian Party at 13 at the convention. It was pretty cool.
So this is, libertarians, this age thing, this, age of consent, this children's rights of human beings, individual emancipation of kiss my butt. And besides, Trent Soames is sporting a full freaking damn beard anyway at 18. Okay. The boy's got skills when it comes to facial hair. So I'm going, so to say, nope, you're not allowed. Hey, man, stroke your beard and say, yes, I am. All right. So this is going to be a youth thing, and it's in recognition that they get to have a say, especially when, oh, by the way, you got to pay for all the crap we just spent, So I'm for the youth having a say. Now, the first question that I have is that this mindset, that legitimacy, comes from a federal piece of paperwork.
Yeah, okay.
I want to know where that comes from.
I want to touch on this. This is not our mindset. This isn't the Youth Caucus's mindset. This is, I completely agree with you that it's complete bullcrap that I have to file paperwork in order to legally receive money from donors and then file more paperwork to give that money to candidates who I think is best. I think that's complete bullcrap. But regardless of what I think, the people that give us the money, the people that we are trying to get money from, want to see that piece of paper. For whatever reason, that's what your thing is, brainwashing or whatever, but they want to see that piece of paper. So in order to actually solicit donations and give money out to candidates, we think it's best to have that piece of paper. That's like what our...
Okay, I understand. So my next question is, why are they giving the money to a papered youth caucus when they just give the money straight? Or are they looking for you to do something different that they can't? I mean, tell me the value of the Libertarian Youth Caucus. Why?
Yeah, so I noticed you were reading off of our charter earlier, and I hope you take the time to read the whole thing. But our charter basically spells out what we are and what we do. The first thing we want to do is start campus organizations. Campus organizations across the United States would greatly benefit the Libertarian Party. Unlike Young Americans for Liberty and Students for Liberty, which are mainly philosophically focused, focused at getting people thinking about libertarianism, we want to actually get people elected. So, say you're running for Congress in your district and you need help running Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, etc. You're going to go to your local youth caucus and you're going to ask them for help. And basically, the youth caucus would say, yeah, do you have an endorsement for the Libertarian Party? And you would say, yes, I do. And so then they would run your social media for absolutely no cost. There are other things we want to do, too, like producing videos for candidates, And that requires money. I've produced two videos for Candidate Helps, and then one video for the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania for a commercial for ballot access. But those things require money. So, and then we actually, because we want to give to candidates and actually help them monetarily and buy them resources, commercials, etc., that's also what we solicit donations for.
Okay, now, so, this is going to be targeted to certain... See, this is where it always comes down to. Somebody will come and go, hey, man, I'm a youth doing kind of butt-kicking, and I need the help and the money, and pick me. Yeah, we do. No, we don't. Based on what?
I mean, well, first off, they have to have an endorsement from the Libertarian Party, and that is our first and foremost requirement. But then
endorsement from what? From the board of direct, the LNC, the, you know, I mean, what
no,
do you mean?
No, like from, they have to be a Libertarian candidate. So like I know in Pennsylvania, in order to legitimately be a Libertarian candidate, the executive committee of the local, the county has to say, yeah, you're a candidate. That's basically all.
Okay. So I got a Libertarian. We're going to have a bunch of stuff going on here in Arizona. We have a lot of the youth. The Levolution comes out of here. Got Meetup still rock and roll. It's the largest, you know, Ron Paul Liberty movement meetup in the world out of Arizona.
Yeah.
Right. Freaking not later. Okay. Right. Well, let me think. Not later, okay? As we're meeting now after the convention, the meeting start, I start a big one tonight, we go and kind of working with and kind of in the Republican, Democrat, of come go, dap, dap, but what do? We're going to the youth. We're going to the universities here in Arizona. We've got, you know, all kinds of ready and rock and rolling and party and have, you know, Luke Radowski here and Kokesh now in Arizona. And we got kind of, we got the youth thing going on. So what do? Do we need you or can we be a benefit to you? And I need to know, if we're going to include you in a lot of the rip-roaring good time of it's always the youth in Arizona, and what I see, and the reason I made my address to the convention, I don't know if you were there when I did, my whole point was, I've been doing this for 28 years and seeing the power of the youth. Now they're growing up. Now they're having kids. Now, Nick, the chair, he used to come to our meetings when he was 12 years old here in Arizona. Then he goes and did a fantastic job. It's the future. It's the youth. I get it. So the thing is, what do we need you for? Why are we going to have you? What are we going to, and the criteria for our candidates or the different things that we're doing, you're going to make the decision you're going to work with us based on what? Because there's going to be a lot of people wanting your help. I guarantee Gary Johnson's going to want something for something. Now, Gary's going to be coming on the show. We can talk about you guys and the youth thing. That may be what we work with Gary and cut targets. I'm always about the future. So I'm going, what is the criteria you're going to use to help whatever campaign or candidate in what state? Help me out here.
Yeah, so I think your question might be better answered by like what a local group would actually do. Like, so... Hopefully sometime, maybe way in the future, but every public school will have a youth caucus attached to it. And these youth caucuses have to at least have four people inside of them. You would be amazed at how much four people can do when it comes to running social media, making videos, designing websites. Like, they're teaching coding now in elementary school. Like, can you code? Like, I definitely can't. But if we have...
Called Hour of Coding with the Khan Academy, doing it with my six-year-old granddaughter right now. This is the future. Here we go. We come back. We'll go ahead and we'll expand on this a little more because I want to help. I mean, I want to help, but I don't want to be, you know, anchored. I don't want to be chained. I don't want to be limited. I don't want any of that, but we can help.
All right.
Okay. Tread, this is one thing that I'm building up to in the last segment, and this is what we'll do. Since the convention, I've been in the text exchange with Gary. You know, I've known Gary for a long time. You're very helpful. Hell, we did in 12 when Ron was running. We still did campaign fundraiser for him here in Fountain Hills and told him, look, man, there's going to be a lot of Ron Paul wearing Levolution shirt, you know, tote and kind of get over it. And he's like, that cool. He's like, you know, Gary's been very easy to work with. We get along fine. He'll be on next week. Now, the thing is that there's also a lot of the tried and true in the long term of we're kind of putting together, we're going to have us some fun here in Arizona. My problem, and I told Gary, I said, look, I can't get past this weld thing. I mean, it's not like personally I give a crap and whatever and you're still voting. I mean, that's not the point. I can't use a ticket that has weld and what's going to come with that as a way to introduce the youth into this movie. It's too inconsistent. Ron Paul was so easy. You know, I couldn't even do it with Rand, much less Weld. But with Ron Paul, it was a head down plow, just what he said, kind of I don't have to make excuses for kind of crap. So then what's the next thing? We'll see. We're going to find out today, you know, in the next hour, you know, whether a guy made it on the ballot for U.S. Senate. Then we're going to find out. We got another lawsuit going on about access for a bunch of other candidates. We'll run. We'll probably be doing that. But the one thing that I can count on that I can do is that I always penetrate the mindset. That's what I do. That's how I, this is what I do for decades. What I do is to bring attention to the philosophy in a cool kind of hip and whatever and youth and we're having fun way and we win, you know, regardless of what happens on election night. And election night is just a party and we don't care. Okay. If I got to worry about what the election totals were, I already lost because I need to win in the mind before I even get to that point because I don't trust the computers anyway. So that is, we're going to be doing this in the youth thing already. So what I want to do is I'm going to make sure that we have something to do is going to be more pushing for what Judge Weiss was doing on the McAfee campaign. It's let life live, hashtag be a libertarian, putting up a sign like we do the Lovolution. Just imagine a bunch of signs, QR coding and linking, going to watching those videos. And that's just hip and cool and changed the public opinion of people and the rest of it. I don't give a crap about it. Naturally happens once people's opinion has gone a certain direction. How you can benefit and or help or be part of that is what we need to discuss. You see my point?
Yes, sure.
All right. So this is, well, it's going to be, we're going to do what you're doing anyway. It's already going to happen. It's just how you can benefit from it and structure and people that want to go fill out paperwork and so on and be over and kind of we can work together. But we're going to do it anyway.
I think you're like focusing way too much on the paperwork.
Oh, hell yeah. Here we go. Hold on.
Audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.FM.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It's the same old story, same old song and dance. Same old story,
same old song and dance. Oh, when have I not heard this before? Over and over and over and over. It's the same of we got in paperwork and filing and doing permission. The board voted on and kind of what I'm going to do. And what we're going to do is we're going to be doing it anyway. Here in Arizona, it's already part. We're way down the road on this for years of every time we do 20-something year kind of, you know, here it comes. Well, if we got someone, and that's why they had me a hello. When you're talking to young guys, Libertarian Youth Caucus, they're wanting to get down into junior high school. Boom! Boom shakalaka! How can I take advantage of this? But I got to be clear up front. Whenever you create an organization or a group around a cause or a purpose or a movement, sooner or later, every freaking time, the group or organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. Every time. It's called Steiger's Law. It's a long story. But whenever you create a group, it always becomes more important than the reason you created it. So we do the reason we create, we just do it. Now, anybody else in a voluntary, temporary alliance of we can help them, help us, help and whatever, without having to, you know, do a blood oath with anybody, kind of, I don't care. We can help the Libertarian Youth Caucus get some attention, some effectiveness, and ride on the coattails of what we're going to do anyway. So I'm willing to work with Trent on this, but don't ever think I'm going to fill out one freaking piece of paper. That is not happening. Now, if the people want to go and join and work with and kind of peace, I don't care. But you're not going to get a freaking piece of paper out of me. So however we do anything, it will not include paper. Do we understand?
Well, that's good because we have electronic forms, too. So, you know.
Nor electronic forms. I guess I got to add that now. Okay. So anyway, so we'll work out something. Yes, it can. Think about it. Tens of millions, hundreds of millions of money and effort through the Lovolution of two presidential campaigns. And I didn't fill out one piece of freaking paper. It's called the First Amendment. Bite me. All right. And that, so that's not going to happen. But that doesn't mean that we can't work together and we can introduce you and have you guys come. That's another thing. Do you guys, you know, got a budget yet for any traveling, or we pay for you to come out and participate in some event and you can get, and somebody get on a plane and come do it?
We are still budgeting that out. It's part of what we spent so much at the convention was about our travel, and well, we paid for our travel, but not as much for like the booth and stuff. Like most of our money went towards that. So say you wanted to start a youth caucus, you would only have to fill out a paper with your name on it and the other people that joined the group, just so that we know you exist and we can send you resources and help. That's the only reason why we need you to fill out anything. So like that takes the time it takes to do that is just so that you can write down your name and the other two people's name, or three people's names. Like that's it. Just so we know you exist.
Okay, I give you an example. Would they have to fill out paperwork? I got, you know, local high schools of kids. I mean, this is kind of things that they do. It's spring break. The administration says don't come back to the school. They're doing practicing SWAT drills of guns on camp. Kind of, you don't want to get in the middle of that. Don't come. So they take pieces of paper and they go and slip in them all the vents of the lockers that says that you're, for your protection, your locker was searched during the break, kind of thing. Well, did they? No, they didn't. Well, maybe they did. You don't know. But they did that. Oh, it causes an uproar and they're just having a good time. Oh, where's their paperwork that they fill out? These people are ones doing activism that want to help put up signs. They want to help the candidates. They want to help. I push a button and there is, you know, dozens of kids out doing, we're going to go get some. And I'm going, all right, well, I need you to, you know, listen to these guys, the Libertarian Youth Caucus. They got something for you to do that would benefit them in what way? Why would they join your thing? What's going to, is that going to prevent them from doing that kind of stuff and be spontaneous? Do they got to fill out a report? Is there some limit?
No,
do they go to jail?
Absolutely not. Like you're blowing this way out of proportion. We have one piece of paper that you fill out and that's it. Like that is all we require you to do.
And then they do whatever they want.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much as long as they as long as they're not being neo-Nazis, then we're cool with it. Like, we just want them to help candidates, and if they're helping candidates, then that's fine. Like, we want to see people elected. Like, that's our ultimate goal, is to have people elected in office that are libertarian.
Oh, so it's a voting thing. That's just a jab. Okay. So we're going to go ahead, and it's focused on, you know, because I see the political process is just an excuse to, you know, to help change opinion. It's a, you know, the voting thing's a side effect to me. Now, for you guys, like, no, it's not going to change unless you get people elected and vote and kind of help them out there and vote. So I'm like, all right. So people that are interested in electing candidates, and we got candidates here in Arizona. I mean, what would be the criteria for these Arizona candidates to get some Liberty Youth help, or more likely, they're going to be able to help you, you know, get more credibility and more legitimacy, whatever that means, you know, into the process by you being able to put a label on a high-profile, successful campaign here. How would I work out with these candidates or different efforts here, you know, going, okay, we submit to you that we think you should come to Arizona to do whatever, and what's the criteria, you think?
Literally, the only criteria for getting our help is that you are a libertarian and you have approval from your local libertarian chapter or whatever to run. That's it. Like, we don't have any additional criteria.
Okay, now the first election cycle here, I mean, it'd be good to have a strong candidate, but you got a national candidate. I mean, I know you were influenced by Gary Johnson last convention there in Pennsylvania, and to do so, I'm sure that he was, I saw him, he was very encouraging of you guys. He stood and, you know, and made all the national newspaper and television go away so he can go take a picture with you guys in front of your banner and all that. So Gary, he loved him some Libertarian Youth Caucus, I would imagine, right?
Absolutely. And here's our offer to Governor Gary Johnson and his campaign staff. We want to run Students for Gary Johnson. That's what we want to do. We want to handle that. And at the very least, we want all of his groups to be registered with us. And here's why. 4 years ago, when there were Students for Gary Johnson groups, after the election, they all went away. There's not a single one left. But imagine if those people, for the 4 years in between now and then, we're still meeting, and we're still helping candidates, and we're gaining experience. That's what we want. Like, in 4 years, we don't want to have to build up an entire infrastructure of students again to get the next libertarian elected. We want that infrastructure to already be built up. And we see LYC as the group to do that because we're the only group that is really focused on doing that. So Governor Gary Johnson, if you're listening right now, I really want you to give me a call. I sent out a press release about this. My number is included on that. And I want you to give me a call because I want to help lead your student organization. And that's our message to the governor is we want to help.
Okay, let me tell you what I'm going to do to help you out. We're going to be working with the state here and the activists, and we're kind of outside of, we're not filling out paperwork, but we're going to be helping, you know, libertarianism in this state, and there will be a component, of course, of Gary and the other campaigns and so on. More than we're looking for whatever help you're going to do to, you know, 200 young people marching, putting up signs in 115-degree weather that, you know, I wouldn't count on. We can be of more assistance for you to be able to express your method effectively and have the presence, certainly in at least a state. Now, wherever else you're focused, or maybe Pennsylvania or whatever, I'm good friends.
We're launching in 20 states, just so you know.
Okay. You know, we'll make sure we're included here. And we have a lot of good relationship with the people in Pennsylvania. So I'm going, all right. I will go ahead and promise that I will make sure that you are included as part of the discussion and whatever we're doing here to the whole plan of you get to play. But I'm telling you, do not expect paperwork filing. Whatever relationship that we have will be separate in such a way, you guys do whatever the hell you want, and I'm not going to be filing paperwork.
Listen, we won't make you file paperwork,
Thank
right?
you. Thank you. That's minimum job requirement one. I fill no freaking paperwork out. So what we're going to go ahead and do is let's go ahead and plan on this. I will stay in touch with you within 2 weeks. We will pretty much have a plan for what we're going to do in the long term of this election cycle and how we can get you guys attention at least and the participation of that. And maybe, you know, your first people of the charter of the chapter of whatever the hell. Okay. So we'll go ahead and work with you on this to give. But the only thing that I ask is that you pay attention. Should you have problems, was it because you were a collective? Was it because you had meetings? Was it because there's always that one guy on the board of I got money, take over and do, and you're not allowed? Was it because, and could you have done it differently? We're going to learn. I already think I know what's going to happen, but it won't be from us. It's going to be from our side here in Arizona. We're going to bust our butt to make sure that the explosion, which always comes out of Arizona, you're going to get to participate in and be a significant part of if you so desire, okay?
That sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Peace, brother. Hold on a second.
Freeman, host of Free Talk Live.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a test, and it doesn't work unless I help you. You see my point? It doesn't. I need you to be able to get everything that you wanted and participate through it. You wanted the presentation, all the people that you want, the participation of people going to help you. I need that so that it is a good demonstration of it works or it doesn't.
All right.
Okay.
Just so you know, though, we are in summer, so, like, starting student organizations, period, is already tough. Like,
No. We get that. I've been doing this a long time. I get it, okay? But now's the time you set it up in infrastructure and get the first few people to do and kind of be ready for when September comes. When the schools start populating,
exactly.
If you don't do it now, you don't have it ready by then. It's too freaking late.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Okay. I'm all over it. All right. This is what you can expect from me. If you don't get contact from me in 10 days, you know, contact me, you know, because it means I law have forgotten something. But within 2 weeks, you're going to be getting contacted by me with opportunity for Skype hangout meeting talk, kind of what we're doing and how you guys can participate. Because your participation is not going to determine, really, we already kind of got a beat on for years and years what we do and how we do it. But we can include you in that to where you'll have an opportunity to market yourself to the very people that are going to be participating. You'll get at least some boots on the ground to make sure that you get represented.
All right, sounds good.
All right, deal?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks, Trent. You know, good luck, man. We'll be in touch. We'll see what we can do to help.
I appreciate it. Hey, and tell Governor Johnson about me.
He already knows.
Yeah, I don't know if he does. Like, I don't know if he saw that press release. Like, he needs to see that.
All right,
thing.
Donna, can you please send a link today of this hour with this interview to Gary, so that when he has absolutely nothing else to do when he's running for president, he can listen to the show, you know, and we'll get it taken care of. All right. I promise I'll do that. You know, Ernie recommended listen to the show. We're going to help and work with and do and kind of rock and roll.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. And Dr. Frank is in for the next segment. He says, Pennsylvania greetings. He's from Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. He wants to say, yo, what's up? There you go.
All right. Cool.
All right, man. Good luck.
See ya.
Be in touch. Bye.
According to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, U.S. airstrikes have killed at least 15 civilians over the past 24 hours in the area around Manbij in northern Syria. Three children were said to have been among the slain. The strikes were done in support of the ongoing Kurdish YPG offensive against the Islamic State forces in the area around Manbij on the western side of the Euphrates River. Kurdish forces are said to have captured 15 villages in the area in recent days. The Pentagon had confirmed conducting 18 airstrikes against the area around Manbij, which it described as a strategic town, but CENTCOM has since insisted that it had no information on any casualties in the area, particularly civilians. The U.S. has admitted to killing about 40 civilians over the course of the entire war in both Iraq and Syria, though rights groups have put the figure roughly tenfold higher than that in the 400 range. Most reported civilian deaths are dismissed out of hand by CENTCOM, which insists it only investigates the credible ones, and even then and rarely offers any public accounting of their findings.
For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. UPI reports Alabama Governor Robert Bentley on Wednesday testified in the ethics trial against the state's top legislative leader who is accused of using his political post for personal gain. Bentley took the stand Wednesday and recalled meeting with House Speaker Mike Hubbard. Responding to a series of questions from Alabama Deputy Attorney General John Gibbs, the two-term governor said he met with Hubbard about economic development projects favored by the Southeast Alabama Gas District, a scenario critics view as a conflict of interest since the gas district regularly paid Hubbard's private company for consultation services. Bentley said, I invited him to go to some of the meetings and the ones he felt comfortable and wanted to go on. I'm positive he went to one meeting with me. I don't remember any others. Hubbard was indicted by a grand jury in 2014 on nearly two dozen felony criminal counts. Prosecutors believe he unlawfully lobbied Bentley and Alabama Commerce Director Greg Canfield on behalf of the gas district, which already paid Hubbard $12,000 per month for consulting. When her plush and comfy life suddenly and unexpectedly fell apart, Brooke and her dog Cloud set out to defy the odds. If this is a man's world, as they say, living on the streets is no place for a young woman. One day she awoke in the Redwood Forest and realized she had become a hobo and would ultimately come to know exactly what it means to survive. How to Be a Hobo by Brooke Willett is available from Amazon.com and all major bookstores. Reuters reports a jury awarded $22 million to an Ohio man who sued the city of East Cleveland and police officers after he was beaten while handcuffed and placed in a storage closet for 4 days. Arnold Black, a 48-year-old man from Maple Heights, Ohio, sued East Cleveland after he was stopped by police in 2012 for suspected drug activity, handcuffed and beaten so severely that he suffered memory loss and required brain surgery. An attorney for the city of East Cleveland could not be reached for comment, but the Fox TV station in Cleveland Maryland reported that city officials plan to appeal the ruling. The decision in favor of Black came at a time of fierce national debate over the use of excessive force by police against minorities. According to court documents, the officers thought Black's green Silverado pickup truck was a vehicle used to transport drugs. Black said one of the officers who detained him, Detective Randy Hicks, had been drinking and repeatedly asked him with slurred speech where drugs were sold in East Cleveland. Hicks proceeded to punch Black repeatedly in the head as officers threatened to put him in jail if he did not tell them where the drugs were. Black was placed in a storage closet at the police station where he was kept without food or water for 4 days and forced to relieve himself in a locker. Black's attorney, Robert DiCello, said in a phone interview, "My client suffered mercilessly." He added a Cuyahoga County jury reached the decision on the lawsuit on Tuesday. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Concerned. Now, how concerned am I? I don't know. I'm pretty damn concerned. But you know, there's a lot of rays of hope is always what keeps us driving forward. You know, this is today we're doing. It's always the we just have some fun with the Trump report on Thursday with Dr. Frank Tanbury Trump report. Say, yeah, we'll do some Trump report. There's a lot of Trump report going on. But, you know, what a lot of people, you know, probably know and suspected is that, you know, Frank has an announcement to make today. What is, has transpired over the last couple of days there, Frank? Tell me all about it.
Well, first is my birthday.
Happy birthday! Hey! You made 50 yet?
Yeah, thanks. Well, my hair has.
come on. Give me a chance. It's all part of public record now.
Yeah, I'm 46.
46. Okay, 46.
Yeah, it all goes downhill 46. From there. And So yesterday, I didn't even realize it was my birthday. I had to be reminded from my better half.
That's how, I'm
that's
same
how
thing,
it
man.
Goes. Yesterday was a busy day, and we turned in 4,600 signatures to the state capitol.
And you needed 3,000.
3,000 for the U.S. Senate.
So unless they get really funky, you're on as the Libertarian candidate in Arizona for United States Senate against John McCain, America.
That's right. And boy, was it kind of an interesting time. I went up there and it was like a mini party because everyone was, you know, it was towards the end of the day and everyone was showing up at the end with their signatures. And there were a bunch of reporters, including one lady from the Arizona Republic who was like, who's this? Who's this? Who's that? And boy, did I make sort of a hubbub.
Of course
because
you did.
I walk in there
who the hell is
with
this?
Who's this? An entire box with all these signatures, and the kicker is that, heck, John McCain, they didn't have to have as many signatures as we do, right? Because they only have a certain percentage of the Republican Party. We have to have a certain percentage of the independents and libertarians,
and there's more independents. More
there's more independents.
Yeah, I
so
know,
I had more
man.
Signatures than the Republicans did.
Ooh.
So therefore, when I walked in with that many signatures, basically, because it's a Senate seat, and I had to get independents, I actually delivered more signatures than any other candidate walking in there that they've scanned all day. So, of course, they're all wondering, who's this guy? Where are all these signatures coming from? And the reporter said, what are you running for? I said, Senate. And she kept saying, well, which district? I said, what do you mean? I said, Senate. She goes, no, which district? And I realized she kept thinking I was state senator. She goes, no, what district? And I looked at her and I said, all of them.
Oh,
oh! now it gets even better. So we turn all this in, and Michelle Reagan came out. She, you know, she
Secretary of State,
and she was very friendly and very nice, and she kept coming up, and just really friendly.
Did they expect us at all? Did they have any?
Oh no, no, they had no idea.
Clue, no clue.
So then
they don't listen to the show.
They don't listen. They are going to be listening. And by the way, I'm sure many of you are listening, tuning into the Trump Report for the first time. Welcome all of the Republican operatives, and I'm sure they've already checked out that I was one of them. I was a precinct committeeman, good old Republican and libertarian. They're probably doing a lot of background checks
Austrian
today.
Economics. Yeah. Doctor that has never taken anything but cash. Mm. No insurance, no Obamacare, no nothing. Naturopath that also can prescribe. I mean, you're here in Arizona, you're a doctor. And so the thing is that they're looking at, a week ago Saturday, you spoke at the march against Monsanto, which is a left kind of thing, and kind of announced what was coming, you know, and I spoke also, introduced Jim. We talked about, you know, here it comes. Well, now it's here. Mm-hmm. So of course, this was done. We got to be upfront about this. We've all been talking about it. This was an advantage to the Democrats. They wanted libertarians on. They knew what the Republicans had done to prevent libertarians from being on the ballot. And they saw John McCain as the most vulnerable sitting Republican in the U.S. Senate when a strong libertarian campaign was in. And they go, you know what? Well, we are just wasting money even running a Democrat unless we make sure a libertarian is on. So that's been part of the negotiation. Right. So you're dealing with them. Now, of course, the deal was, one, we're open about it, and two, that we get the pox on their house as much as anybody else, and they don't have any strings, and they can anyway. So that is what's going on. Now, did that come out at in the press that the Democrats were doing?
So that's getting to that. So first of all, I want to be clear that I do owe a favor to the Democrats, and what they're going to get from me is a fruit basket probably around Christmas time. That's about it. All right? That's it. All right? Good. I mean,
their favor is you did it. So
yes, exactly. Exactly. And they're going to probably have to buy me another motorcycle at some point. But anyway, I'm just kidding. So anyway, but the point is,
I'm not kidding. Buy me something.
Yeah, got me something.
I want the Democrats. My whole deal, they want me to do this. I go, fine. The Democrats just paid for whatever federal taxes I owe. They go, well, how much? I go, well, whatever it is, you owe it. Or I ain't doing it.
Well, let me explain something, guys. And by the way, Don is putting some pictures up. I took a few shots from inside the secret room where they do all the scans of all the signatures. But what happened was after I signed, and it was kind of like a party atmosphere, I think, for a lot of them too. Keep in mind, they've been running these signatures and collecting for the last week, people bringing in signatures from all around the state. So it was kind of like a mini party, sort of like New Year's Eve when it turned 5 o'clock and everyone's like, yeah. But everyone was very friendly and very professional, and I didn't get too much of a stink eye when they would say libertarian. If anything, they were smiling, and I think... I thought it was
clicked.
Amused.
It registered.
It began clicking. And I made I made sure to be there on purpose at the end of the day. Okay. I wanted to be the last person doing this. So we did. I kind of waited downstairs and then we did it. Now, here's, I don't have much time we have at the break, but here's something interesting.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
So we're in the back. After all the handshakes and everything, they took pictures with me, with Michelle Reagan, and with the flags. And it was very nice, very cordial and professional and fun. But then they open up, with their little pass badge, a room where all the scans are. And they, of course, escorted us into that room with all the petitions, the signatures. And then they began running through, and they showed us the process. And they had two people putting them into this giant scanner, this giant machine. And then from there, they had four people on large computers, all facing us. So you could see the screens. Everything was open. And they had four, turns out there were temps. So they hire these temps around this time to, and I think two were Dems and two Republicans, I think. But in any case, they had the four there, and their job was to go through and make sure, you know, count one-on-one, you know, how many signatures were per page, and just do an initial, you know, count and make sure that, that the addresses and the zip codes all matched up and what have you. Anyway, so we're there for about 20 minutes. It was pretty efficient. They did a great job. They're very friendly. This one woman was having a caffeine problem from not having enough Mountain Dew, so that was pretty interesting. She was comical. My point is, we're finishing this up, and then DJ, who's our Democratic friend, I asked him, how long do you think until the Arizona Republic lady, she was the one asking me about what precinct I was running for. She, you know, so she realized I was U.S.
Was it Lori Roberts?
I'm not sure.
Was she tall?
Kind of, yeah.
45, 50, yeah, blondish, yeah. Kind of, probably Lori.
Kind of. And matter of fact, she looked at DJ right before she left, and she went to DJ and she said, Oh, you're being very... She goes, you guys are being very nice, aren't you? She gave him that little look, right? So I'm in the back with him doing the scans. And then I asked him, how long do you think until the Arizona Public publishes something? And he said...
Nanomoments.
He said, yeah. He goes, Frank, it's already published. I said, what? He goes, Twitter. So he shows me the Twitter. He pulls up his phone. And already, right? It's only been like 5-8 minutes. Already, there's a picture of me from behind with my ponytail. And I'm signing in when I basically signed in the, you know, those signatures. So she already had a picture saying Libertarian candidate for Senate. And she posted it everywhere to the state of Arizona. But the best part is, as I'm coming down, we're in the elevator, and the elevator door opens, and there's a gentleman who turns out is the senior attorney for Governor Ducey. He was leaving the office for the day. And he knew DJ, he said hi, and he said congratulations to me. He already got the Twitter feed on the way down the elevator within moments.
Yeah, they're not wasting any time.
Unbelievable.
All right, we'll do some pictures when we come back just a little bit, show you what's up in some other news.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're going to come right back with a clip, a two-minute clip, from the National Convention presidential debate. One of the presidential candidates, Dr. Feldman, did it great. He's that libertarian. We'll find out if Frank's that libertarian. Dr. Feldman, he's going to tell you what that libertarian is.
60 seconds.
Some may ask, Feldman, is he that libertarian? I am that libertarian. I'm that be what you want to be libertarian, that you look good on TV libertarian, that Muslim libertarian, that Jew libertarian, that Christian, atheist, Hindu libertarian, that Rothbard libertarian, that Jefferson libertarian. You know I'm not messing libertarian. That LGBTQ libertarian, no sex libertarian, that MLK Jr. Malcolm X libertarian, that revolutionary honor hall Ron Paul libertarian, that Richard Winger Bill Red Pass ballot access libertarian, that Daryl W. Perry no apologies anarchist libertarian, that Gary Johnson New Mexico success libertarian, that Austin Peterson freedom ninja in your face libertarian, that John McAfee world class badass libertarian, that no pain, no gain, get those petitions signed in the rain, libertarian. That sorry, I'm not sorry, libertarian. That can't stand the infringements and abuses, libertarian. That right here, right now, no excuses, libertarian. I'm that libertarian.
He's that libertarian.
Yeah, there we go.
Are you that libertarian? You know, there's that libertarian. You know, that was the flavor of the convention. And my whole thing was I worked hard to try and make sure that everybody, the wide swath of people that were represented at the libertarian on the stage there was represented. And the first time ever that the Libertarian Party, certainly from Arizona, didn't have a single none of the above vote. That has never happened in my 28-year history of. That was, everybody was represented up there on the first ballot. They went, boom. You know, we're, boom. That kind of libertarian. This is the energy that was coming out. So I'm just like, there's a lot of, you know, and there's a bunch of stuff. I have dinner tonight with John Buttrick. Gary Johnson and I have been texting back and forth, meet with him next week. Got the youth caucus kind of telling Arizona's going to have us some fun. Now, how we're going to do that? Judd Weiss, the old McAfee campaign and be a libertarian, exit politics, the video and the public opinion of freaking rock and roll libertarian. Are you going to be that libertarian? Okay. So we're going to talk about it. Now, the thing is that, let me just show you some of the pics. This is like in the back counting room that, you know, Frank did. They got their, of course, they got an elephant and a donkey there on the, where's that libertarian thing?
Yeah, where's the penguin? Where's the penguin?
Yeah, you know, where's the penguin? You know, a lot of people don't know the penguin kind of represents, they're monogamous and lifetime and tried and true and steady and kind of cool. So the emperor penguin has kind of been just kind of a mascot, you know, to some people for a while. So this is, you're down there now. When we left off, they were saying, you know, how long do you think before the story comes out?
I know.
You didn't leave the office before that.
No, I didn't. I was like, we're taking the elevator down, and the governor's top attorney is already on the Twitter and saying congratulations and giving us that, you know, of course, give me that once over. I'm trying to figure out who this guy is. But they all knew DJ. I mean, DJ's like a rock star there. I mean, it's like going to Cheers. Everybody knows his name. So we're,
Well, he was Democratic National State Party Executive Director of Paid Eye, Kick Your Ass.
But it was nice. You know, Republicans, Dems, I mean, everybody.
They knew that they were behind this. So now, in
I'm glad I was there with him.
Now, any of the, and that was the thing that I said, look, man, you got to be, this has got to be an open palms up thing. Or it's not going to work, because they're going to bring out, and they're going to be saying, well, the Democrats put up ponytail over here to be, you know, whatever the hell. And you're going, yeah? And your point? You know? Yeah, you piss us all off enough, you know, this
and
kind of crap
is,
happens.
Yeah, and I just want to be clear, because I know some of you are listening. We might actually write to the Yellow Page, which is the Capitol, kind of the Capitol Steps journal there. I want to be clear for any of you reporters that are listening. You know, I'm fine just, you know, staying home and playing Mortal Kombat. I've got a great Johnny Cage character, and I'm kicking 12-year-olds behinds over in China. But the only reason that I'm doing this is because I've had it with the establishment, and more importantly, what they've done to the Libertarian Party. And I'm sure you guys know by now, you know, I was in good standing Republican, you know, Libertarian, Conservative, whatever box you want to put me in, because there is no box, and the American people are tired of the boxes.
You're a Libertarian, so Austrian economic
there
guy.
We go. However you want to classify. But you know what? You know, the Libertarian Party, they have their issues. I'm very Libertarian philosophy. Don't always agree with the party, just like I don't always agree with the Republican Party.
Yeah, you know, we'll just slap like you Democrats. Around when necessary.
That's fine. But the thing is, I am tired of these shenanigans. And if it takes a sitting senator of 30 plus years, you know, who's a senior senator, part of the Defense Department, you know, as far as with the you know, with the Defense Committee. I mean, to have someone with that kind of experience, and in order to win, they can't win on their record. They have to go after low hanging fruit and you know, attack the opportunities, at least the Republican Party. I can't say whether Senator McCain was directly involved or not, but I'm sure they all know. But the Republican Party to go out of their way and change the access, the ballot access for libertarians, making it more difficult for libertarians than it is an independent. I mean, if you're just a regular Joe Schmo independent who decides on a dare
at a bar. This was a shot across that we kick your butt and we legislators and do.
Yeah, exactly.
The Republican Party did this.
And the fact that they did this to any party, they did this to the Green Party, I'd be just as ticked. But the fact that they did this to basically our voice and your choice, that is what these Republicans did. And look, Democrats are just as shady with things, don't get me wrong. But the fact that the Democrats voted against this bill, Libertarians didn't have a choice in it, no other third party had a choice, but the Republicans shoved this thing down the Arizona people, down their throat, and now we're seeing this revolution of the establishment.
I want to
be clear that that is the reason why I'm not playing Mortal Kombat. I have better things to do.
Well, this is the reason why they just had me sitting on my hands and I don't care, you know, but they did this and now they got to pay and they have no idea what's coming. They don't see it. They can't. You can sit there and I can explain to them exactly what's going to happen. Doesn't mean anything because it doesn't mean anything to them financially. They're not paid by some group or lobby to blah, 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 blah. All they do is McCain people go out and cut the brakes on your car or something. I mean, I don't know, you know. Yeah, don't laugh, man.
Well, what's interesting, too, it's like they're going to make the same mistake they did with Ron Paul, which is they first ignore him, of course. I mean, there's the whole thing about ignoring. But then they think he's an outlier. Well, he's just some old crazy Uncle Ron here. Now, the same thing with Donald Trump. They didn't see him coming. Now that he's here, he's an outlier. He's the exception. They're not understanding that he's the tip of the iceberg of what's there.
You know, this is one thing that I don't think you realize, and you'll get it, and we'll have the on tape, and I get to say, Neon, I told you so later, is that at the convention, one of the guys that really took off, he goes, yeah, Clinton, Trump, I just call him the clump, okay? So I'm going, yeah, the clump. So anytime you're going to have libertarians, you're referencing whatever, it's just the clump. Because the more and more, they'll be start to merge to be the same. You can already start to see in his kind of appointments of people that's going to, like, ew. All right, well, we might get into some Trump stuff, you know, get caught up on that when we get back. But it's on!
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Thursday, gold is even at $1,215 per ounce. Silver is 6 cents higher at $16.07 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $533. Robertson Roberts Brokerage has been helping customers with buying and selling physical precious metals for nearly 40 years. How can we help you? Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
That right here, right now, no excuses, libertarian.
That libertarian. You know what was interesting is that Mr. Dr. Feldman, he was, let me show you what he looks like, you know.
Right now.
You know, let me go ahead and show this guy right here. While we were doing the convention, what happened was a guy got hit in front of the hotel, a hit and run. Boom! He's going to, well, doctor heaved out there and doing and helping and so on. Somebody took some cell pictures and everything of him helping the guy. They put it up on the national convention screens up there, and Nick, the national chair, he goes, you know, it just emphasizes, when you need help, you call a libertarian. Need help? ? Call a libertarian. I'm feeling a bumper sticker coming on. You need help? Call a libertarian. And this is just, it was just the atmosphere. I really enjoyed myself. I'm glad I went, so McAfee doesn't owe me a plane ticket. But the, so I'm really glad. Now, let's go ahead and shift it over. I know everybody, Trump report. Okay, so help us out, Frank. You know, give us the Trump report, man. Go.
Well, it's been, we're still kind of in that middle of the eye of the storm until we hit the other wall, which is going to be coming right before, I would say around July when it really, or maybe halfway through June. When things ramp up for the convention. Right now, there's still this standoff between Trump and the establishment. Who's going to bend as far as, you know, or capitulate to who? So the big news, which actually happened last week right after our radio program, was that Paul Ryan...
Hold on, Carol. We'll get to you in a second.
Paul Ryan was getting ready to be endorsed, by the, what I'm saying here, by the establishment. So Paul Ryan is thinking about endorsing Donald Trump. That's still kind of up in the air. They're still playing this game, this power play.
I so don't care.
You're asking. It's been kind of a lame week. That's what's happened. Now, what's interesting, though, was he took on the media. That was probably the highlight of the week. And not just the liberal media, it was the Republican as well, because Carl from Fox News is right there. So we're talking about the Republican establishment media, along with the Democrats, and Trump just went on it. It was surreal. Because you could see that they were having a private conversation, and this went into, and keep in mind, Trump was, he's out of primary mode. He's the nominee. And yet he was acting and battling against the media as if he was still running, right? So this is something that's going to carry through. And the last reporter asked the question. He was, maybe MSNBC, I forget. But he said, Mr. Trump, is this what's going to happen if you're president? Is this going to be like a daily event with you and the media? And he says, basically, damn right,
hell
it will.
Yeah. Freaking A. Thank God.
Oh, God.
Oh, okay. We got a caller. We want to go to Carol from Pennsylvania. We wanted to, you know, give you up for a praise or something. Carol, welcome to the show. Go ahead and make your question or comment, please.
Thank you, Ernie. Hey, Frank.
That's my cousin Carol. Oh my God, you're listening to the Trump Report.
Suffering the brain damage of Trump. Okay, well, what do you think of Frank running for U.S. Senate against McCain?
I'm going to say an international congratulations.
Well, thank you. I got, if nothing else, I feel all warm and fuzzy listening to that nice Pennsylvania accent.
Well, this is...
Oh, I hear you. And also, it's a happy day for Frank. I don't know if he'll let me say it or not.
Birthday!
Happy birthday!
Well, birthday!
Thank you!
You know, I'm feeling some spankings coming on, you know? And Donna, go get out your whip. I mean, your... No, it's... Anyway, so we'll have some fun. It was a good birthday present for him. You know, this has been a long process, you know, for a while. We've been working on this, and it come to fruition. That's very cool here in Arizona. It's going to upset some apple carts. There's going to be. So what's the family think of Frank doing this?
Well, we're all proud of him here. Very, very pleased and, like, very... Don't know what's going on, but very supportive and behind him and rooting for him.
Well, that's good. I'm glad yeah. You, before we go, I got to go to the Trump Report because people freak out we don't do Trump Report. Carol, thanks for calling. Anything you wanted to say, friend?
No, I have to call my family later today and say hi. I'm so out of the loop myself. I had to be reminded it was my birthday. So thanks for the reminder again. Cousin Carol, love you. Say hi to my mom, and we'll talk to you soon.
Have fun, sweetheart.
Bye-bye, girl. You know, the thing is that when you have a family that sees this kind of stuff and they go, wait, I didn't get the postcard. Did you send everybody? Did you let them know this was going on?
No. For my sister, people thought I was all mad at them because I didn't tell anybody. Because I wanted to wait. The thing is...
Because you never know you're dealing with Democrats, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to be telling people you run for U.S. Senate and then it doesn't happen, people will just think you're just making this crap up, right? Then I can believe it. So I just figured, let me wait. And honestly, I wasn't going to say much anyway until June 10th.
Because yeah,
June 10th,
done.
June 10th is the deadline when any opposition can file grievances against your signatures.
You want
and
them to. They already planned for this.
Yeah, I know.
They had a budget for attorneys and doing that. Just
we're all
press.
Ready for it. I know.
File!
I know.
Come up against them. We need more attention.
I want them to sign it. I want them to petition our petitions just to prove that we got the 70% accuracy, that our own count was that good. Just to challenge it. I'd love to do that.
Let's see. 4,000 times 7 times 4 is a bunch. So you got enough anyway.
Yeah, we're good. Well, let's finish with Trump. So Trump, it was Trump versus the media, and that was probably the highlight because it sets the tone that his attitude was not just, you know, bread and circuses to get him as the nominee. I mean, he's still going at it, and it includes Fox, the head guy. And Carl's, I forget his last name, it's not Icon, but it's the Carl the reporter. By the way.
Bernstein?
No, I forget. By the
Rove?
Way,
no.
So guys, just so you know, I know we're kind of more lackadaisical today, but I had too many. I think I had two, which I don't really drink much anymore, but I had two Bloody Hillaries last night. And basically, it's a Bloody Mary with Tabasco sauce. It's called a Bloody Hillary, and I usually sip on them when I go through my emails, but I had about one or two last night to celebrate. But anyway, going back to Trump, we have this is kind of a big news in the media, speaking of media, on CNBC. All right, CNBC, which obviously is a liberal, you know, leftist column, and the Jake Novak, who's one of their top opinion guys, and his top story, which I know Ernie already said, I don't care, but I do.
Care.
They said, I was wrong. Trump will, in capitals, be the next president.
So who said this?
Jake Novak.
So he's
the head
Novak.
Guy of CNBC. So he's coming out saying this, and this is in the top front page of CNBC. Now, I guess he probably just tuned into the Trump Report. He doesn't realize we made that call last July, but he's going through now, just a month before the convention, try to explain to everybody how brilliant he is, that he the Democrat, is saying we're done. And I said this last time on the air, that the Democrats behind the scenes, because you and I know people behind the scenes, they've already packed it in.
Yeah, they're like, Hillary,
they
are
know,
you freaking kidding me?
We're not talking about wishful thinking. We're
talking
reality.
Well, who are they
reality.
Bringing in? Biden, Kerry? Are they going to bring anybody in, or they're just not? Or
too late. Remember, and they still haven't hit her with the whole email deal yet. And I'm not saying she'll be indicted, but certainly if she's not indicted, then all this information is going to come out, and they are
waiting
on it.
Doesn't matter. It's just
It's
just everybody knows that she should have been.
it will wound her even more. And the Democrats know it. So what's going on is the Dems behind the scenes know she's going to lose, so they don't don't want to put bad money, I mean, good money after bad. So they're not going to continue with her with too much money to support her presidential campaign. They're going to give her enough, and she already has enough money from all of her speaking engagements that she can run and have some commercials battling Trump.
Okay, but get the real dollar amount from speaker and
but
speaking
the real,
engagements.
The real... I'm sorry?
How much has she got from her personal? I mean, it's tens of millions of dollars.
Well, that's the whole point. She's not releasing how much money she's getting from these speaking engagements. That's half
but
the
she
problem.
She wants Trump to release his IRS.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. She won't release how much she makes. She won't release what she said at these private galas. She's not releasing her emails. But she's so transparent, this woman. So anyway, the Dems, it's a shame. You know, I see that support for Bernie Sanders. He's getting railroaded the same way that Ron Paul has. The same deal. But Hillary Clinton, the Democrats behind the scenes, they know she's going to lose the presidency. So what they're doing is they're trying to put their money, instead of behind her campaign, they're really putting it behind the down races, the Senate and the House, including, you know, myself running. I mean, that's what they're doing, because they realize it's done with her. But how can we block Trump in Congress? That's their strategy.
Because now, McCain and their testing, which a lot of us here in Arizona know, it's all corrupt crap anyway. But if you look at the Senate Republican candidates up for re-election in this election cycle in 2016, McCain was very vulnerable, but he was the most vulnerable when you had a quality libertarian candidate in there. They like, so the Democrats, if they didn't spend enough money on getting a libertarian that would, you know, be a quality candidate that would do it, you know, then this election cycle, any money wasted on Kirkpatrick, whoever it is, you know, would be wasted. It doesn't matter. So that was the number one expense, is making sure they get a libertarian on this ballot. And we're going to get them with a bunch of others, too.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless, free market, non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government. By using their money, you are helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it, use it, spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't.
Yeah, we're on the eve of something. You know, that's one thing I wanted to kind of get a beat on. This, the Trump report, we'll probably, I don't know, what do you think? We should still continue to keep doing the Trump report, or are we going to morph it into whatever the hell, or just grins and giggles?
No, we'll still do the Trump report. Yeah,
Trump
at least
report.
Until he gets know, I guess elected. I don't know. I mean, yeah, honestly, you know, what's funny at the Trump report is this whole point was, you know, I predicted he would be in the last July. And now, you know, and I said this a few months ago. I said, we're going to look back. The average person is going to look back a year from now. And they're going to say, you know, of course Trump was going to win. Like how can we not see it? Or people are going to assume that
please.
Was always that way. Exactly. Well, it's just going to be common sense. Like Ronald Reagan. No one thinks of him as bedtime for Bonzo anymore. He's the president. And I know it's going to be.
But they own that.
They're going to look back.
That was the difference. Mm-hmm. They're going, yeah, and they had memes and stuff that back in the day. I remember them. You know, bedtime for Brezhnev. You know, there was. You know, I mean, they owned it. It was the whole Reagan camp. See, I'm seeing the same thing happening now. There, this attack on the media. I know what it was. They focused on his Trump University of Real Estate. We ripped you off money. You didn't get rich because of whatever. And I'm going, well, then you'll a fool and his money is soon parted, and because Trump said doesn't mean squat and whatever. So they're going after him. They're really hammering on this. And I'm going, that's it? That's all? I mean,
it's the best you have, right?
That's the best. Right. I'm going, this is... So they're just emphasizing this so much, and any... and they give them so many opportunities to make fun of the media and how inaccurate or biased they are that all Trump has to do is go in a national press conference. ABC, what's his jerk over there, is a scumbag piece of crap, thus saith Trump. Well, what's the headline for everything? Doesn't matter what he said.
Mm-hmm. Right. In a strange way, Trump is like a distorted funhouse reflection of the media. I mean, if you think about it, the media is finally seeing themselves with bad hair.
About
and that's kind of what
time,
they're,
man.
That's how I see this. You know, I spoke at a group the other day. It was for introverted physicians to help them with business because I am an introvert. People don't believe it, but I am. And, you know, it's challenging for introverts to have a business because if you run a business, you have to market and get your name out. And the one thing an introvert does not like to do is to go knock on doors and say, hey, you know, I'm a better doctor than the guy next door, you know, and be loud about it. So introverts have a problem. Anyway, I spoke there and I commented about a speaker recently who's a Harvard marketing professor. And I was commenting on what this person had said that, of course, Harvard just figured this out, which is that there's a revolution in how marketing is done now based off of a few studies the last couple years. Again, everything's got to be a study, which shows that the number one trait that people are looking for any brand across the board now, which was not number one, now it's by far, and that is authenticity. That basically
sincerity.
Well, the term they use is authenticity.
Yeah,
so if you have authenticity, granted, everyone will always claim, of course, they want authenticity, but it was not really rated high on what people responded to. It may have been image. It could have been, you know, how good looking the person looks or whatever. It was always something else. But now enough with everything. The canned laughter on sitcoms is gone. Heck, people don't even like sitcoms. They want so-called reality shows, right?
I can't even stand Judge the canned
shows.
Laughter thing anymore.
I know. You can't even handle it. I mean, you watch Happy Days, you just can't handle it. I mean, well, I don't mind the fonts. But the thing is, this is a shift in what people want and politicians like Senator McCain or Ted Cruz, or just look at all the crop of candidates. When they're asked a question, the average voter now can already predict what they're going to say, because we've heard the same canned laughter, the same canned responses so often.
Austin Peterson, the Libertarian presidential candidate, one of the guys, nice guy. I really liked him and everything, but I don't think he emphasized this point enough. The authenticity thing was what kind of just came off too polished, and it just didn't work. He was the producer for Judge Napolitano, and like kind of, but he had, well, he was crafted, man. He was a shiny bottle of champagne. I mean, he came in a pretty foil box of something, you know. And I'm just going, God, that authenticity thing. You know, you could put sincerity. I think he was sincere. It was probably the authenticity thing. It just seemed a little bit too wrapped, and that's a big thing now, especially when you're dealing with social media. These guys, but then you go the other way and you want to demonstrate some authenticity, and you do a Reddit Ask Me Anything Rand Paul thing. Well, that doesn't really work out because you know it just they're just not that way. Well, yeah. Trump comes off as just a bolsterous kiss my butt I don't careism of it's a game. Mm-hmm. And he's playing it so well, and the media, they just don't like it. So they're just calling BS on. They're trying to, you know, and every time they go after him, all he has to do is find some, you know, inaccuracy or exaggeration or something that they do, and then beat the living crap out of him for being lying sacks of bias snot, and then they have no defense. Other than say, yeah, but nobody cares.
You know who did the first shot across the bow, and to give him credit, was Chris Christie. That's what put Chris Christie on the map. He was the first politician that went after the media. And that was when he first got sworn in. And he had a press conference, just like what Trump had. And back in Jersey, what was it, like 8 years ago now, whenever he was sworn in. I'll never forget that. Rush Limbaugh played that. He goes, there's this guy from New Jersey. You got to check him out. I still remember. I was in my car. I remember where I was when I heard it. And he played it. And he says, you got to check this guy. He's the new governor. His name's, and he's like rattling the papers, you know, and he goes... like this, you know, with the papers. He goes, his name's Chris Christie here, and he played it. And that got me energized. I had no idea. His policy's nothing, but the fact he took on the media saying what Trump did. And then, of course, he lost all that steam. He turned around and became part of the establishment. And to this day, I know Chris Christie is probably on suicide watch because all of this that he's seeing was in his hand, and he couldn't see it, and you know, he capitulated to the establishment.
Before we run out of time, is there any kind of personnel or Trump campaign or cabinet appointment, VP kind of stuff that's going around? Do we have any idea?
That's the thing. I'm not trying to not bring too much good content to the show, but of course, running for Senate adds to some time. But no, not much has been going on with Trump. He's been holding his cards pretty close. Every show, every interview with Sean Hannity. I mean, I used to have all kinds of clips for you, but now there's not much going on with the clips. It's kind of talking about the gorilla this week. But basically, Trump, they keep asking him, everyone wants a scoop. O'Reilly, Hannity, they're all trying to get the scoop of who are you looking at, what names. He's not saying anything. Trump already in his mind. Remember, he has this all mapped out. He's had this thing mapped out. I know, because I tried getting the website, you know, Make Arizona Great Again, and it turns out Make Georgia Great Again. Every one of them was taken up before Trump announced. All right, so Trump has all of this already. He's playing this out.
You got something
What'd
you get?
That's later. But Trump has mapped everything out, including this convention. So he knows we're going to be having a hell of a party. I think Bill Clinton's was fun back in the day. I mean, with Hollywood, Trump's probably going to have Howard Stern be the MC or something. I mean, it's going to be interesting. But it's going to be fun. And he has this mapped, including the VP. So he is keeping this extremely tight.
You know,
there's five names he's playing with.
Well, he already knows. There's going to be the gay Amerasian black socialist kind of something ticket of one person, and then you have the female whatever and then there's the guy that whoever it is that he wants, you know. So you're going to have five names, but they're going
to
be
Newt Gingrich seems to be the favorite right now, and of course Fox. In all fairness, Fox is pushing it too because he's a Fox contributor, and they would probably love Newt on there. Newt was a very strong advocate for Trump
I can see that. That would bring out the old contract on America with America, whatever America thing, from 94. That was kind of the Republican attempt to, which is reason why Ron Paul came back, and he was out of Congress during the 80s and so on. It was that Republican revolution, pinky swear, we're going to reduce government. You know what came of the whole thing? The one thing that they did, they eliminated a $135,000 position for a tea inspector in New York. Some federal. That was it. Hey, we cut back government.
We cut that.
Yeah, darn it. We cut it back. $135,000 tea inspector. Don't say we didn't give you nothing. You know? That was what came out of that whole thing. You think I'm kidding? That was it. You know? And I'm going, right. But we cut government.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Newt, I'm not in any way, it'd be great to have a female Latina or someone. I don't care whoever's qualified. But I think if you put Newt Gingrich as an older statesman, white man, it's also saying that I am not going to be pandering to political correctness. I'm picking the right person for the job. If they happen to be a white man, so be it. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think he'll, we got to keep doing the Trump. Everybody's giving me crap. You call it the Trump report. I go, it's the only way that I give a crap about POTUS to just have fun anyway.